Arcade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new week, a week filled with hope, a week filled with optimism, a week filled with the knowledge that that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout is only going to be in office for another 70 days, 17 hours, 58 minutes, and 25, 24, 23, 22 seconds, and counting. As they say over there at NASA. How do I know that? Because there's a handy-dandy little Bush countdown clock, courtesy of bushslastday.com, and it's in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. I just love to watch those seconds tick away, knowing that America's hope, America's new birth of freedom, perhaps, yea, verily, even the restoration of the Constitution of the United States itself is within reach. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is your nightly three-hour audio dump. That's a joke. Last week was one for the ages, not just because of the marvelous election results, but more personally here in the studio, something radically new and different. Shot a lot of video, and it was an amazing experience dealing with a couple of really talented videographers, and yours truly, multiple chins, turkey neck, and all being the subject thereof. We also went up, Michael and Jen and I, went up to the mountaintop removal site, mountain removal. I'm taking top out of that phrase because it ruins the whole damn mountain, okay? Went up to the mountain removal site near where I live. I'm going to try to get that photograph to ELO. To see if we can get it up on the site so you can see what it looks like near my home, what they're doing to this little community. I'll send her a couple of pictures. One of them is a photograph of the little town nestled in the autumnal splendor of the Appalachian Mountains. The other photo is the hell on earth that the coal mob are creating for us here. And maybe that visual will give you a little bit more of an idea about why we get so wrought about having our communities devastated and destroyed. I wept. It took my breath away. Truly it did. So I'll try to get somebody remind me. I'll get that sent along so you can see it. But that was a heck of a fascinating week. I love watching the creative process underway, and I got to see it up close, personal, and firsthand. And hopefully you'll get to see the outcome of it at some point along the way, because this wasn't just an exercise. There's hope that of making this something that you'll want to see.
So that's that was last week and over the weekend, and now we've and so again, so many thanks to Michael and Jen. Wow. What professionals. But a new week is upon us. And I thought we would try to do something a little bit different this evening. Instead of just jumping right out there, let's into the cesspool, into the swamp. And I know this puts some of you off, but let's start the evening with the sports report. Friends, neighbors, sports fans, it is the Head On Radio Network, the Horn Monday Night Sports Report. I'm your sportscaster host, Biff Kincaid. And I just want to let you know that we've got a lot on tap on this evening's sports report. You know, it's fitting that we would use a fight song, because I tell you what, they had a tilt on Saturday between the Bayou Bengal Tigers and the Crimson Tide. Many, many, many mistakes led to the Bayou Bengal Tigers' defeat, leaving the Alabama Crimson Tide undefeated thus far on the season and in the driver's seat for the mythical national championship. It proved to be a disheartening loss for the Tiger faithful. Okay, enough of that. It did prove to be a disheartening loss for the Tiger faithful. In particular, down around Conecuh County, Alabama, home of the world's most fabulous smoked sausage, by the way, Conecuh brand. A man and woman were shot dead after an argument that witnesses said started over an Alabama-LSU football game, but sheriff's investigators said Monday they continued to investigate the motive. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Another one of those lovely weekends in America's ongoing deal with the devil, whereby crazy drunk sports fans with firearms go a little over the top. Dennis James Smith, 41 years old, and Donna Kay Hall Smith, 39 years old, of Bruton, Alabama, went over to the home of Michael W. Williams, 28 years old. This was after a phone call. Now, get out your John Madden telescreen sort of marking things, because you're going to need a little bit of this. Just to keep up with it. Donna Kay Hall Smith was a relative of Michael W. Williams's girlfriend. Now, Michael W. Williams had been sitting around the house watching the football game with some friends, and a phone call came in from Dennis James Smith, and they argued heatedly on the telephone. One side apparently being an Alabama fan, the other side a Bayou Bengal Tiger LSU fan. Dennis Smith, the victim, was the LSU fan. And then, wow, Dennis James Smith and Donna Kay Hall Smith, his wife of Bruton, Alabama, got in the family truckster and drove over to the home of Michael W. Williams, just to make sure that he was prepared to make his point as persuasively as possible. Dennis James Smith brought his trusty shooting iron with him to argue about a football game. Sure enough. Well, You can't hardly expect Michael W. Williams to just sit there and get shot at. I mean, you don't, you know, if everybody's bringing a gun to the party, you know, it's BYOG, bring your, BYOF, bring your own firearm. So Michael W. Williams got out his handy-dandy shoot gun. Apparently, he was either quicker on the draw with the shotgun than Smith was with the pistol, or Williams just saw that Smith had a pistol and acted, shall we say, in self-help. Yes, self-help. No comment coming from the relatives of any of the victims or the suspect. Williams has been arrested and charged with 2 counts of murder. Oh, it just makes you feel good to know that America's armed to the teeth. And on football Saturdays, drunker than Adam's off ox. I seen that. He was a-holding him the whole... them Crimson Tide... Alabama's a-holding on... Oh, they's a-holding the whole time. And I'll come over you over there and I'll show you some holding. Jesus God. Yep, 2 people dead over a football game. Now, that's not to say that only SEC fans or only Southerners can get bananas about football. They're none too happy right now in Ann Arbor, Michigan, with one Rich Rodriguez. I haven't heard of any gunplay yet. And I imagine the Penn State faithful are rather unhappy now that Penn State sort of took a powder against Iowa. Yeah. Don't reckon Texas enjoyed losing to Texas Tech a couple of weeks ago. But this one, well, you just had that perfect recipe. A heated football rivalry, firearms, and a boatload of booze. And 2 people are dead. And we're talking about the Deep South. So let me recreate the attitudes for the gun ownership on either side of this debate. Well, I'm going to have me a gun so's I can protect my freedom when the government comes to take my guns with their tanks and bombs and jets and howitzers and bazookas and grenades and so, I'm going to defend myself with my gun, my pistol. That's how it works. This will obviously be filed in under most people's moron category. But I wouldn't be surprised, he said, putting on his tattered robe with the moon and stars and getting out his magic eight ball with the crack that always says, answer hazy, ask again later. I wouldn't be surprised to see a press release from the National Republican Rifle Association saying, you know, we need to pass that law in Alabama where anybody that's scared can shoot first and ask questions later and not be charged with murder. Because obviously, Mr. Michael W. Williams was... you know how the rest of it goes. Yep. You read this stuff and it's unbelievable. And no, you don't blame the gun. You don't blame the booze. You blame the idiot with the gun and the booze. I mean, this is like, what, Clorox and ammonia in the bathtub, for Christ's sakes. But that's okay. We can't. The right wing's already told us we can't have no responsible gun ownership law. That's why there's 108,000 more gun purchases between October of last year and October of this year, because Obama's going to get their guns. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Maybe if somebody had gotten these 2 ignorant horses' rear ends guns, there wouldn't be 2 dead and 1 facing a murder rap. Not that Obama's going to get their guns, because he stood there. Oh, I reckon it was Ohio or somewhere that the equally, you know, gun enthusiastic. maybe Indiana, maybe Pennsylvania, and said, I'm not coming for your hunting rifles or your pistols. Nope, not going to do it. So, you know, we just know that over the next, that on any given weekend, you're going to have Michael W. Williams, Dennis James Smith, and Donna K. Hall Smith stories. And idiots coming not to blows, but to shots fired in anger. Yep. Meanwhile, a quick little side trip over to Austin, Texas. The Longhorns are down one player. Buck Burnett got kicked off the team recently. Buck Burnett had a Facebook page. And, you know, it's got that little status thing that you type in what you're doing right now. Well, after the election, Buck printed, all the hunters gather up, we have a er in the White House. Yeah. I don't see a hell of a lot of difference between Donald K. Williams, or Michael W. Williams, Dennis James Smith, or Buck Burnett, frankly. All you hunters, gather up. Gather up what? You know, the damn guns. Gather up! We got a beep in the White House. Jiminy Christmas. He was thrown off the team, and there are a lot of angry Texans. Well, why is it he can't say that, but they can call me a honky or a whitey or a cracker? We going to lose all our freedoms under that Obamer. You think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Bob, from beautiful Middle Tennessee.
Hello, and aren't you glad that was an Alabama story?
Oh, I am indeed, and, you know, I'm going to go someplace completely different, if I may. My little story will involve, in some part, poetry. But it also centers around two deaths, a faulty belief system, and imprisonment for a couple. So
doesn't sound too different to me, then.
Shall we press on? First of all, I just happened to be a firsthand eyewitness to this little parable and how it played out. So I'll tell the story in first person, but it's not about me. It's about a bigger topic. And as a fellow that wanted to do something different with his life, I decided I would quit a regular job that anybody's mother would be proud of, and I went off into self-unemployment as both a photographer and a band manager, and I ended up working with him for what was arguably the loudest, most outrageous, some considered dangerous band in North America, an outfit called Poison Idea, usually just referred to by their initials PI. And after working with them for about a year, three things came together that made life genuinely interesting. Two Ethiopian men that were students at Portland State University were beaten to death in southeast Portland because they were non-white guys who were at the wrong place in the wrong time when four local skinhead followers found them at 3 in the morning. And they found them at 3 in the morning because these two Ethiopian students, doing well at Portland State, ran the Avis rent-a-car office at the Portland airport. So they came home about 3 or 3:30. That was their work. All right, that was thing one. Oh, and by the way, the two of them lived in the same apartment building as me, so I had some serious proximity to that awareness. The killing happened in the driveway of the apartment building. Now then, as I'm working with this loud, outrageous punk rock band, being the loudest and most, you know, aggressive band in the world, the darn skinheads started showing up at shows. And they, looking for, you know, the biggest thrill they could get out of music, kept showing up where the band was playing. Well, that was not a good thing, because the original crowd for the band didn't care for it, And then things got really interesting because critics and magazines and people that had ignored the band previously, they didn't want to print it the way it was. The darn skinheads were showing up at the PI shows. They started saying that Poison Idea was a skinhead band. Oops. Well, that made for a terrible situation because mostly Poison Idea was this very apolitical band that made music that people cared about around the world at that punk rock ground level, punk rock level. So now then, here we're all looking at each other in band meetings going, what are we going to do? We got to do something about this. A, skinheads and all that they stand for are wrong. We know they're dangerous. The crowd that we want to play to in the United States and Europe, because by that time overtures from Europe were coming, for both label signings and tours, but there was this thing about, what's the skinhead connection to you guys? Are you guys another Screwdriver? That being the most infamous evil band in the world.
Right.
So here we are. Suddenly we're on the brink of, having a little something going on, not having to work day jobs, blah, 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 blah. But there's this incredible mess that's all around us. So the founder of the band says, look, maybe a song that tells the world we're not about that. I'll write a song, guys. And we're all looking at each other. Well, in 2 weeks' time, the song had been written, the song had been rehearsed, it had been recorded, and it was off to mastering. Now then, I guess if it's okay with you, I will read the lyrics to the song.
Sure.
Because I'm hoping I can encourage you to play the song later. And since it's true punk rock, very few of us will catch the lyrics, but they were printed on the little liner jacket. And the name of the song is Discontent, Words and Music by Jerry A. So much discontent in this hate-filled place. How can you want a master race? We all got to learn to help each other. You are my sister. You are my brother. Open up your eyes and see people living in harmony. Open up your mouth and scream. Some of us still have a dream. Open up your mind and think what you spew really stinks. Open up your eyes. Open up your ears. Open up your ears to peace. Will this bullshit ever cease? Listen, Nazi. Never again. We're members of the same nation, one suppressing opposition. One way we can all be free, fight the real enemy. So it took a few weeks to get the little 7-inch record out, and it took off like gangbusters. It was selling like crazy in Europe. It was selling like crazy in the U.S. Suddenly the band went from, are you sort of kind of Nazi skinhead affiliated over to you're pushing back? And the reason I phoned in about this is here we are on the tail end of the what we should be observing, at least in some way, Kristallnacht.
Yeah.
And in that horrid event, a minority made trouble for another minority, and too many stood around and way too few did anything to push back. And if you don't push back when you see it and you know it, and I think the right-wing, ugly neocon Republicans, even through their churches in many ways, tapped into the same ugliness that I live.
Well,
I mean,
you know,
you've got this guy saying, gather up the hunters. Well, I still have phone tapes with, we're going to kill you for what your band has done. We're going to burn down every place you live in. You guys are group lovers. We're going to get you. And we had to, and I'll say we because I was part of the organization, we had to do something. And it changed the landscape in a lot of different ways.
It's 70 years ago, Kristallnacht. 70 years ago, this year, It became called that by virtue of all the broken glass as white supremacist Nazis ran around breaking the glass of storefronts of people deemed to be Jewish.
Or taking the glass out of synagogues,
Yeah. 70 years ago. And now fast forward 70 years into the future, two men, one from Arkansas, one from Tennessee, are facing federal charges, skinheads, who were obsessed, as we've discussed on this program, with the magic Hitlerian numbers of, 1488 or 8814 or whatever those idiots do. And lo and behold, the 14 words and the 88,
The 14 word screed and 8 and 8 being 8 letters of the alphabet. So, Heil, you can figure out the rest of it.
Yeah, and the other part of the 88 being an 88 word quote from Mein Kampf.
Mostly it centers around ignorance aimed at people that have done nothing to them. In many cases, only strive to simply live their lives.
So these two idiots planned. These two idiots planned to destroy and murder. They wanted to murder 88 African American students at a school and behead 14 more. And then they planned to go out in a blaze of glory, shooting it out, trying to get President-elect Obama. And they were going to do so dressed in white top hat and tails. Now, the real critical part of all of this that sort of brings everything into a sort of a clarity of focus is the recent confirmation by the Secret Service that every time that Godzilla from Wasilla, Sarah Palin, would hold one of her rallies where she screamed about socialism, or hollered about palling around with terrorists, the credible threats against the life of Barack Obama would go through the roof.
Exactly. And the other side of that same coin, somehow she would find those 70-year-old tiny, tiny embers and fan them into life again and stack kindling next to them. And just when people ought to be pouring cold water on that and finishing it all off, they dig it up and reignite it. And the other side of this that just made me crazy, and every one of your listeners knows this to be true, the life cycle for that the media awareness for those two nut jobs that were going to kill Barack Obama and do all the rest of that, the news cycle for that was what, 12 to 14 hours?
If that had been
a guy with a Middle Eastern name, or maybe even only Middle Eastern features, two slingshots and an air rifle that said, "I think I don't want to vote for McCain," that would have been Fox News 24/7. Right?
Oh.
Exaggerate.
Yeah. It would have been with the stunning graphics and the America under attack.
Exactly.
Oh, hell yeah. Hell yeah. And so I'm not, you know, this stuff is not lost on me. One of the sleaziest things about all this socialist business was that it's another scene in that movie that we've been to and know the ending of, because a certain little guy with a Charlie Chaplin mustache, standing next to the smoldering ruins of the Reichstag, declared in full voice, "Das ist die Arbeit von Kommunisten." This is the work of communists.
Exactly.
When the Reichstag fire was a ginned-up, dummied-up PR stunt designed to enhance his power.
It was the sinking of the Maine on one side of the timeline or the Gulf of Tonkin on the other.
Or a certain something that happened in a, down a day in September 7 years ago.
Yes.
Exactly. And you know, there's a few guys across America that will throw communist out there. I'm sure by now Jim Quinn has thrown it out. I'm sure Cunningham has thrown it out. McCain wants to stand up there like some friendly whomper-jawed, wall-eyed old granddaddy saying, oh, we're going to have a clean campaign. But, oh, you know, the piss-licking dogs that he unleashes on the world, they're going to scream it. So he won't do it. He will just say socialism. And you have said it. Others of an informed nature have said it. They resort to code words because the ones they want to impress, there's that, there's the secret decoder implant in the brain of those people. Socialism, socialism, communist, communist, socialism, communist, socialism, communist.
I know. And you mentioned that Cunningham freak and that Quinn freak. Well, then maybe we'll have the audio later. The Quinn freak declared, back before the weekend, you know, this guy gets paid and he's got this satellite show that, I mean, it amazes me. He declared that there's no difference between, slaves on plantations had food and shelter. Their children were cherished because they were the next generation of slaves. And he said, what's the difference between that and welfare? Free food, you know, he said, the difference is the slaves actually had to work. That's 2000, David, that's 2008, my brother.
But you're not quite correct. He started that rant by saying slaves got, and I'm quoting via two reliable sources, slaves got free money.
Yes,
You're going to have a tough time with any dig into history proving that one, Mr. Quinn. I guarantee you there were no black men with whip marks on their back walking around jingling single eagles in their pocket.
The average life expectancy for an African male slave in the antebellum South was 60 years.
Oh, really that long?
At the high end.
Yeah. I would, yeah.
It was, that's right. That's the max. So, yeah, you get, and this is 2008. And G. Gordon Liddy last week telling a caller that Obama at Obama's re-education camp, they'll be fed turnip green, collard greens, and, what was it? It was disgusting.
Well, just
saying. But the point is they're ramping this garbage up.
Absolutely, and it matters. It has an outcome. It causes damage. You know, we all need to forget, you know, Will Kimbrough, I'm sorry, not going to be nice anymore. This sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never, no, forget that. Words are the reason they go get the sticks and the stones, folks. Wise the hell up.
Yeah, and... Right, less polite, and what the Dixie Chicks sang, you know, not ready to make nice. But we all have a certain amount of vigilance upon which we are called as these days progress. My God, CNN this evening, Dave. Their headline on their website, it's still there. It hasn't regenerated. I ought to take a screenshot, but I can't really walk and chew gum that well and still do a show. This is the headline. There's a photograph of Obama and Bush sitting in the Oval Office, and the headline underneath the photo is, Obama to take office amid deep public pessimism. Now, what does that mean to you, David? Or, I mean, no, not what it means to you. Back up. Belay that. What do you think that means to the average person who goes to CNN's website? Obama to take office amid deep public pessimism.
They doubt the fact that they voted for Obama as being a good idea, or they know that all of us that are proud of that Obama vote have caused pain for them and the nation, and now then it's right down the crapper, negative, 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 and that is so dead-ass wrong. There is more optimism around our country right now than I've seen in the past 12 or 14 years.
Yeah, and we'll see, and that's the thing. You click on the link, Obama to take office amid deep public pessimism.
I think of that exactly the same way. I think of these, I almost blurted out a dirty one. I think of these evil people as screaming over and over that litany of center right, center right, center right. No. America, if they're asked, are you a center left person? Oh, certainly not. I'm afraid to say that. They don't say I'm afraid to say it, but that's what they feel. But if you go down issue by issue that constitutes a political position, they're in favor of a center further left. Damn it.
Yeah. So I'm reading this thing, and it says Obama to take office. That sounds like there's been some sort of polling data that says that people have no faith in Obama's ability to get the job. But then you click on it, but how many people do click on it? You click on it, and it opens a story that says belief that country heading in right direction is at an all-time low. Well, even that's a little bit.
Do I get a toaster? I figured it out.
Yeah. Only 16% think that the country's headed in the right direction. Because they've got the little bullet points at the top of the story. You got to go to the second bullet point, David, before it says 3/4 believe President-elect Obama will be a good president.
Yeah, they think that right this minute in this snapshot of time, because Chimpy is still sitting there and a significant.
And anything is better than him.
Yes.
Jesus, an empty chair would be better than Chimpy sitting in the Oval Office.
The only thing that isn't better than Chimpy is John McCain. And so far, we've eliminated that.
By the way, Obama had the big meeting with Bush today. And just as a sort of retrospective, I was reading over the weekend a story about the first time he met Bush. And George comes out, and he hollers, "Hey, Obama! Man, you got a lovely bride," and some such crap as that. And then they shake hands. Oh, wait, it gets better. Then they shake hands, and dim leader sticks his hand out, and an aide squirts hand sanitizer into it, which he begins to rub all over his hands, and then looks at Obama and says, "You want some?"
Oh. I wish it weren't true. That is such a repulsive story. That is such a discouraging story. That bespeaks such gut-level, marrow-level ignorance on that little bastard's part. He probably doesn't. He may not even realize he made a huge mistake. He can't be that just out of it. It being the human condition. Oh Lord.
So, I think under the circumstances of how I began the program. Hey, all you hunters, gather up. We got them in the White House.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And rednecks with firearms and alcohol going into, shall we say, terminal OT over the LSU-Alabama game.
Anything that involves getting a car, Louise, I'm going to show him a thing or two. Yeah, it's like, hey, watch this.
Yeah.
That famous phrase for it ain't going to end well.
Yeah. Hey, Marlene, you reckon I ought to take the 5-shot wheel gun or the 17-shot semi-auto?
She probably offered to take the one he didn't want to carry.
Yeah, I know. Well, the other guy blasted them both. I don't know. We don't know yet. Double-barreled, pump action. But in light of all of that,
chances are
coming on the weekend that it's this coming on the weekend that it's that's the 70th anniversary of Kristallnacht. In an America where the Mormon Church, in an unholy marriage with the Roman Catholic Church, is just a stone's throw away. If they haven't already done, they have already done a similar level. They've started a pogrom against the gay community.
Never mind strange bedfellows. Those two factions have never been under the same roof together.
But the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Right. And we all know that, and this is said in unison by both sides separately, we know that our God will send those other bastards to hell, so we can do anything on earth we need to further our interests, because once the eternal, and then you can fill in the blank concerning the their belief system, you know, either Grandmaster Zircon or, you know, the guy with the funny hat and the, you know, interest in boy children, it's, all right, that's a little cold on my part.
Peter Godbold sent me a wonderful photograph this weekend of a protester out in California saying, "You can have two wives, I want one husband." Hear, hear.
That is perfect. Well, I'm sure by now you've got blankies going crazy.
Well, actually, what I thought I would do now, if you don't mind, is I'm going to play the song.
Well, and think back to the lyrics, dear friends, because these boys were these prototypical punk rockers, and they presented it in an art form that is and of themselves. But you heard the poetry and the thought behind it, and it worked really well.
Well, indeed it did. And just for those who, you know, have a fascination with rock and roll and musical history and stuff, it's not like these guys existed in a vacuum.
To put chapter and verse to that, if anybody's ever heard of the band Green Day, when they were in a band, two of them guys, the front man and the bass player, they were in a band called Op Ivy. I've seen those guys come up with PI product and ask for autographs. I've seen Kurt Cobain ask for PI autographs. I've been at Tom, one of the founding members, home when I was walking past Henry Rollins to shake hands with Jello Biafra to go get a beer. They had a following. They were acknowledged around the world.
So with that, I think that needs to be understood, because, you know, the Beatles and the Stones were listening to Chuck Berry and Elvis, who listened to, and you wind up at Robert Johnson.
Exactly.
Well, this is that, isn't it? In its own way.
In a way, it was. And I was fortunate to be around them because it gave me the greatest insight and creativity I ever had in my life. I watched those guys live a life that was dangerous and hard, and then turn it into music that the rest of the world wanted to hear.
And just as a postscript to put not too fine a point on things, because we mentioned this when it happened, that band is not all together anymore.
No, one of the founding members passed, and you were nice enough to acknowledge his death. He died homeless, unfortunately.
And died of a condition that could have been treated had he but had some form of access to health care.
Minimalist access to health care and an expenditure of maybe $300 would have scotched a kidney infection, and he would not have died of renal failure.
But it's worth remembering things like that as we recall the necessity of us standing together to make this administration functional.
Well, you know, and in a very poignant way, Tom was very observant, the fellow that died, very observant man, a thinker, a reader. In Toronto, we had a layover on a tour, and we were in Toronto, and we drove around, walked around, looked around, and Tom remarked, as we all did, that it was the nicest, most pleasant, easy to get along with panhandlers we'd ever seen, because we'd been in enough cities, and you know, sometimes you're tested by panhandlers, but these guys in Toronto were very easy to get along with, and some of them were making conversation. And after that, Tom volunteered, "Well, I think one of the reasons those guys are easier to get along with, if they get sick, they know they won't die of something simple, because this country has health care. We'd be better off if we could do that."
Amen, amen, amen. And so with that, thank you, David.
Well, Bob, thanks for letting me relive a wonderful time, and it was. It was a nice example of taking what you have at your hand and using it to push back and letting other folks know they should try it the same way.
Yeah, directly into the face of the skinhead movement.
Oh yeah,
and that's what you know. Yeah. That's what that is so much of what we're talking about. You cannot remain silent in the face of filth like that, and to respond in this kind is just mind blowing. And folks need to understand, like you said, this is punk in its rarest, purest form, and I think it's stunning.
I thank you, and I hope you don't lose too many listeners.
Take care, David. Bye now.
Talk more. Bye.
Okay.
See ya.
Wow. Don't you love how this all sort of rolls together? How ideas and stories and pieces fit into the puzzle? 70 years ago. Kristallnacht. Last week, a transformative election. The day following, a young man who would have been as easily at home in the crowds breaking glass 70 years ago as he was on his football team at the University of Texas. And the wrap together of a reminder of what it is to stand up and be counted when it comes time to let those who shamelessly espouse their hate know that you will not hear it in silence. And by God, if this is anything silent, it ain't. Poison Idea, P.I., Discontent on the Horn, America's liberal voice.
Some discontent ain't built with. How could you run past the race? Y'all gotta live, help another. You are my sister, you are my brother.
somebody throw some ice water on me. Did you hear that guitar solo? And what David said, everything makes a lot of sense now, doesn't it? It sounds as fresh as the day as it was recorded. Listen, Nazi, never again. Never again. And 70 years later, in the dawning decade of the 21st century, we're still having to say never again. Because there are people who think never again is not what they want. They like the blood. They like the killing. They like the broken glass. They like the sound of weeping women and crying babies in the night. And they don't necessarily have to have brown shirts or down-at-heel boots. No, no. In this country, many of them call themselves Christians. Yeah. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, what's up?
Oh, that was a powerful song for sure. It's not exactly my where I'm at right now musically.
You know, it's not Sunday. No, it's not Sunday morning with the English muffin and a nice cup of coffee by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, yeah. But I respect it as a piece of art and, you know, an expression of some of those things we're not supposed to express, you know, some of our rage and whatnot. You know, gets closeted oftentimes. And so anyway, I actually, speaking of punk, politically courageous, aware punk, there's a band called Propagandhi. I don't know if you're familiar.
No, no, that sounds.
Yeah, the title alone is quite clever. And they're from Canada, I think Winnipeg. And they produced an album maybe about a decade ago, called How to Clean Everything. And they've got songs like Who Will Help Me Bake This Bread? And a huge impact on my political sensibilities of the magnitude like a Public Enemy had on me as well. And REM, actually, a lot of people don't see them as a political band per se, but They actually became quite explicit about it, I think, on albums like, I forget the album, but...
Losing My Religion? It's the end of the world as we know it? That how can that not be political?
You know, stand in the place where you are, think about direction, wonder why you haven't.
Sure.
Stand. Listen to reason, the season is calling, stand. But actually, their CD, Life's Rich Pageant... Michael Stipe wrote a review of that CD to make it clear that it was about U.S. foreign policy in Central America.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he has, if you think about it, that CD has songs like Guatemala, The Flowers of Guatemala, and a lot of interesting things going on in that CD for sure, politically. But anyway,
but that's know. Art's job, and Preston, I got to tell you, it makes the that sort of bitter bilious thing happen in the back of my throat, where you know you get that tingly feeling right there in the mandibular joint. When I read the news out today, or news out Friday, but it just quietly died over the weekend news cycle. We know that the Bush administration, Preston, is literally stealing the silver and pulling the artwork off the walls at this point. All manner of filthy giveaways, things like trying to make permanent the stream buffer zone rule that will make killing communities here a little bit easier. But they haven't missed a lick. They're all the way down to the mundane. Reported as of November the 7th, which was Friday, George Bush has appointed Lee Greenwood to the National Arts Council.
You're serious?
I wish to heck I was joking.
Okay.
You know, Mr. God Bless the USA, the only song he's ever sung?
Yeah.
Yeah, He's on the National Arts Council now. And there's nothing that Barack Obama can do about it.
Well, maybe he can create a different arts council, who knows, and appoint, Sweet Honey in the Rock. And
he's in there for 6 years.
Okay. Well, who knows? Maybe he'll learn something from the other artists on that council. Do you know any of the other artists?
One of the other artists is, let me see here. Another new appointee is Joanne Folletta, the music director of the Buffalo Philharmonic and the Virginia Symphony. She serves a 3-year term, filling a vacancy created last year by the resignation of octogenarian jazz drummer Chico Hamilton.
Okay.
The other 13 slots are all Bush appointees as well.
Okay. See, that's something we don't discuss usually. I mean, we're so focused on the Supreme Court, which is, important, but all these other groupings of, decision makers as well.
Well, see, and this is, this is not small potatoes, because this 14-member council advises the chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts.
Mm-hmm.
And the budget for grants from the NEA is about $145 million a year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one great thing about Barack's campaign. He made it very clear that he was going to refocus government efforts on promoting the arts and music and, expanding what our kids are learning in our schools. So I'm hopeful. I mean, that's too bad that Bush did his thing.
I mean, can you imagine Lee Greenwood recommending, say, a rock opera by a band that plays like P.I. did for a grant?
No. But I know Barack's a fan of, hip-hop music, and I can see him recommending some very thoughtful, conscious hip-hop. So, we'll see. We'll see what he's able to do.
But this is, in a way, Preston, what this is for me, this is a sort of I know it may be low rent to some people or mundane.
Yeah.
But to me, this is a cry that we can't take anything for granted. Where the Bush administration on the way out is concerned. There should be an army of people. I wish there was somebody standing over the shoulder of every member of the Bush administration as they pack. Like I've said before, I got a feeling that the industrial strength paper shredders are smoking at this point.
Yeah. And, somehow at the same time, as aware as I am of some of the destructive things the Bush administration can do on its way out, I'm becoming aware of the very constructive things they can do on the way out. I'm not quite sure what I mean by that.
I think what you're doing is manifesting the optimism that you bring to this program, and for which you are noted, and which I intensely appreciate. Because I think first and foremost, and above all, Preston, you always seek to find the good. And that is something that we have far too little of. By the way, email rolling in from David, who gave us the PI story. He said, "Let Preston know I find Accelerate, the current REM CD, intensely political and affirming of a truly populist view of our nation."
Great. And there again, although REM's been such a band that I've really loved for a long time, I haven't become as familiar with some of their more recent work, so it's really great to hear somebody else reflect on it in that way. And other people that band's worked with, the 10,000 Maniacs, Natalie Merchant, again, very engaged people, very courageous people. She has a song regarding nuclear war, Mother of the War, protest
yes.
song. And what else? The Indigo Girls, another part of this artistic community, progressive, they were going down playing in Mexico in solidarity with the Chiapas, with the Zapatista uprising. And this month, I'm sure that one of them or both of them will be at the School of the Americas protest in Fort Benning.
And speaking of what you mentioned, South and Central America, are you at all intrigued by the release of this new pair of films by Steven Soderbergh, having to do with they premiered it at Grauman's Theater. Sorry, old school. Grauman's Theater in Hollywood this past weekend, calling it Chase Doc. And it's 4 hours and change, two separate films about the life of Che Guevara, with Benicio del Toro in the title role.
Oh, wow.
And all I saw was a little sort of montage, and I think it's a Spanish-language film, which would be fitting. So, needless to say, I was a little lost in translation. But, oh, my God, what this is. He's already won, I think, the best actor at, the Palme d'Or at Cannes for this.
Oh, well, I haven't heard anything about it, actually. I'll keep an eye out for it, for sure.
Oh, and by the way, as far as news is concerned, did you catch what the Bolivians have done?
Well, I know they voted down some sort of referendum, but there's some.
They gave the DEA 2 weeks to pack up and get out.
Oh, good.
And they have come forward and said they will be happy to present the Obama administration with direct evidence that the DEA was actively involved in the cocaine trade.
Very interesting. That's good to hear. When Evo Morales spoke at the United Nations a couple of years ago, he wore this, I think it may have been like a wreath of coca leaves. And he's a coca farmer himself. His whole community is. And, they want to be free to use this thing that they have a relationship with for millennia. And they don't want these fumigation campaigns. And, yeah.
And if I read it correctly, it appears that the allegation is that the DEA had gone into direct competition with these peasant farmers that you reference vis-a-vis Evo Morales, basically acting like the mob.
Yeah.
And frankly, it's not because the right-wingers say, blame America first. No, it's just that I understand how these organizations operate. I understand what goes on at the School of the Americas. Mm-hmm. By the way, we could put that on Obama's list, shut that nightmare down.
Yep.
Maybe on the same day they do Guantanamo. Guantanamo and School of the Americas. Done.
Yep. You bet. I guess Panama, they chased out the School of the Americas. It used to be located there.
Right.
People rose up against it. It'll be interesting to see how Obama is able to relate to Morales and to Chavez. I haven't seen those Soderbergh films you mentioned, but I saw a documentary called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Yes.
And two Irish filmmakers were in Venezuela to kind of do a documentary on the Bolivarian movement going on there. And that was in 2002 when that coup took place, the military coup that kidnapped Chavez for a couple days and also something like basically canceled the Constitution and disbanded the Supreme Court and so on and so forth. And the people rose up and they've got into the streets and demanded that he be put back into office. And he was. So I must say the scenes at Grant Park in some ways really, they were so powerful that way.
Yes.
People getting in the streets. And, certainly there's a lot of big money and big marketing and, orchestration of our own elections. and voices and issues that do get marginalized. And I understand all those criticisms, but still, there was something very beautiful about
it. It's undeniable that there's something in the air right now.
Yeah.
There is an air of hope. There's an air of a renewed faith in the ability of the system to work, because we'd seen the system not work in 2000, in 2004, and arguably in 2006. People like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Greg Palast and others that made it abundantly clear that 2006 was not a clean election. But it looks like at least a macro format, it worked this time through.
Yeah. You know, there's a part of me that senses that these elections are not going our way by, 53, 47, but more like 60-something to 30. I think the gap's...
Yeah, too big to steal. But, of course, with the Norm Coleman stuff in Minnesota, we see that they still haven't given up. There was the Somali translator who worked for Norm Coleman standing in polling places telling Somali speakers how to vote and pointing to the Norm Coleman box. And the margin of the margin is now down to, 247 votes?
Yeah, that's interesting what's going on there. I was surprised to actually see something positive about Norm Coleman recently. I mean, I certainly want Franken to win. I actually sent his campaign some money. And but Coleman, the other day, I saw that he was a co-sponsor, along with Obama, of this Stop Tax Haven Abuse Act. And it's about those tax havens, like in the Cayman Islands.
Yeah, paying American companies to essentially outsource jobs and then not collecting any taxes in the first place. Yes.
Right. Making all this wealth off of some country's labor and resources and then just tucking it away in these banks where the people can't get anything back. It's costing countries billions of dollars, including the U.S. So it's both companies and super rich people are also utilizing these tax havens. But anyway, Obama, along with Coleman and Levin of Michigan, I think.
Yes, Carl Levin.
Levin, yeah, that's right. The Stop Tax Haven Abuse Act. Something to consider. The right wing always does these oversimplifications of issues like taxes.
Yeah, death tax. Right, I remember.
Right. I don't know. We'll see how that develops.
Well, we've got a lot of wait and see, and I think there's going to be the level of anticipation is going to build, and I hope people, especially liberals, progressives, whatever we care to call ourselves, I hope they will exhibit, on the one hand, a degree of urgency with regard to some issues and a degree of patience with others, because it's going to take a lot of work to undo what the Bush administration has done. So far, the transition team has already identified at least 200 Bush administration executive orders that will have to be undone post-haste. I mean, Barack Obama's going to have a cramp in his hand the first day on the job.
True.
Yeah. So true. I guess what I'm calling for is some degree of tempered optimism, and coupled with a recognition that there are only 24 hours in the day, and he is one human being.
Right. Tempered optimism and also sustained engagement.
Absolutely. Do not disengage for an instant. This is when the fun part of the hard work starts. This is the joyous labor. This is the planting of the seeds, not the reaping of the dead stalks.
Yeah. I was wishing those Obama campaign offices had kind of stayed open and you become kind of permanent fixtures for advocates of progressive policies. But, the work does go on daily by groups like Acorn and, so many others that have grown. Moms Rising, I really like that one a lot. That's been around for about 6 years, addressing these family values, this issue that the right wing has seized, co-opted, but, you know, Moms Rising making these issues real. Of paternity leave and maternity leave and sick days, paid, flex time, and so forth. I mean, the things we could be investing in instead of cluster bombs and, you know.
I didn't know if I would have the time to get to it or not, Preston, but I highly recommend you run over to Crooks and Liars. There is a beautiful, just delightful story of individual activism there near the top of the page today about a man who is pushing the cultivation of pomegranates in Afghanistan.
Great. Perfect.
He is a recovering addict himself, and had a glass of pomegranate juice while in Peshawar, fell in love with the stuff, and immediately decided that he was going to see to it that and apparently I guess that region is just pomegranate heaven. So he started a campaign to get local farmers to stop growing opium poppies. And instead grow pomegranates, and he has had stunning, remarkable success.
Rumi mentions pomegranates in some of his poetry.
Well, it's about this time of year that they start showing up in grocery stores around here. It was always a Christmas thing that my mom would see to it that I had pomegranates, and you know, little Bob wanting to learn everything had to learn. Ran to the encyclopedia long before there was an internet, and read everything I could about pomegranates, and now when they show up in the grocery store, my kids go, "Hey, Dad, pomegranate time!" And they're wonderful, and they're just chock full of antioxidants.
Yeah,
and it's just tasty as can be. And if you get it in the juice form, that means you don't have to spend all your time spitting out the little seeds.
Right.
But they are indeed wonderful. Preston, I'm going to roll on just because I suspect that I have an international call on the line here.
Okay.
And I don't want to run up anybody's bill too badly.
Sure thing. Well, good catching up with you. And
oh, wonderful. And, you know, I'm just tickled to death with tickled for you and the rest of Colorado. You guys really came through. And if you see anybody who had a hand in it or you had a hand in it, accept our thanks and our congratulations.
Great. We'll do that. With pleasure. You bet.
All right.
We'll talk again soon.
Okay. Take care, Preston.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. It's our buddy Preston in Denver. I think we're going to have to give Preston a title. He is our silver lining correspondent, and I mean that with all respect, because no matter how grim I can think it is, no matter how dark it can appear, Preston can always find some way, to let a little light into the darkness. And onward we go. Hi, welcome to the program.
Yes, hello. Am I on air?
You're on air.
Yeah, this is Petro from Greece.
Yes.
I was going to call the previous week, but I was kind of nervous, as I am right now.
Well, don't be nervous. Take a deep breath, and you will be fine.
Yeah, I just want to congratulate all the people in America for electing what I hope to be a great president for tomorrow. And I really hope that we will have a great change in America, because I think there was time for all the rest of the world through these 8 years of darkness, that there was a kind of moment that we thought there was no hope in America, but I've always believed there is hope, and America has proved once again that it can lead the rest of the world in the kind of decisions like the one that was finalized last week in the elections.
Well, my sincere hope, Petro, is that we can live up to your hope and live up to the world's hope. I've seen several articles that suggest from all over the world that there is a sense of renewal in the...
Yes, there is. There is, and it's really great. Although I think we shouldn't go, you know, over the top here and think that, you know, President-elect Obama is going to save the rest of the world, because everyone needs to work right now, because we're in a difficult financial and economic moment. And, you know, there are no messiahs here. We're all just people. But I just think this man needs a lot of help from America, from the individuals, from the people, from the government structures. And I think it will be difficult, you know, to change what in 8 years has been, you know, kind of working just for a few people. What I always say to people when they say, like, anti-American stuff, like America just commits wars and stuff like that, I say, no, that's just, you know, a few people up in Washington, you know, just drawing plans for their own benefit. That's not America. America, you know, it's like 200 million people. You know, I'm sure the vast majority doesn't know what's going really on, and they just go and vote for President Bush because they are afraid. They just sunk in fear after the 11th of September in 2009. What do you think about it? Do you think, am I kind of on the spot on that?
I think September 11th will continue to inform this country. And frankly, I don't know if we're ever going to have a valid answer as to what exactly happened. It is for the generation coming of age now, not identical, but very, very similar to the frustration we felt as far as trying to know exactly what happened on that day in Dallas with John Kennedy. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, but I think the most important is not to know what happened, although many of us, and me personally, have doubts of whether it was a strike from the outside or from the inside. There are many theories, I don't know. But the point is to go, you know, to get through it, to get over it, as you say, in America, because you can't just live in the past. This is gone, and I don't think there is really any danger for America right now that most people think, you know. You said once last year that you think someone in Kansas, they're going to come and bomb their grannies and stuff. This, you know, it's just absurd. It's never going to happen. And Iran and Russia and stuff like that, they're not like posing a threat for America right now. America just needs to, you know, fix the inside right now, because all these wars are costing, you know, trillions of dollars, and people, you know, are kind of on the streets starving. And I think this is the most important thing.
I think you've really gotten your finger onto the pulse, because what you're arguing, if I understand correctly, is that we have got to prioritize.
Of course, yeah.
And we have got to focus on what is proving the most immediate threat to the United States right now. And without a doubt, that is, it's on the one hand, it's economic, so that has to be fixed. But the other thing that has to be fixed is the great harm that's been done to the Constitution of the United States. And in
I totally agree with that, of course, with the Second Amendment, which, you know, it's like from the Constitution from, I don't know, 1789, or I'm not sure about my history, but you can't have, you know, an amendment in the Constitution that says you can bear arms based on the national militia when the American Revolution took place. For me, that's, you know, kind of, I can't conceive how this can be still, you know, the rule of the Constitution. And, you know, I know Americans are very touchy in terms of bearing arms, but, you know, you can't have violence all the time. You will never stop violence unless you have some restriction on, you know, a 16-year-old coming on in a shop and buying a noose. I think that's, doesn't need to be said. It's, you know, kind of a tough thing. I think this is a matter for me. I hope that the new president will, you know, kind of focus on this and not avoid it and pass it on, you know, the next administration, because this happens a lot in the other countries as well for certain problems. But I think this is also, after the economics and the war, this is also crucial for America. Because, you know, many people around the world have this, you know, picture of America that it's very dangerous and the streets are dangerous, many cities, because of the armed, you know, everyone can bear arms. I don't think this is the case, but nevertheless, it's completely different in a country. Like, I lived in London for a year, in central London, I didn't have a problem. Like, I don't think that if I live in New York for a year, it would be exactly the same. I don't know. I've never been to America.
It's not quite the same. What's the statistic? There are 14 security, or there's a security camera for every 14 human beings, I think, in London.
But I don't think that's what's stopping. I mean, the basic thing is when you can have possession of, you know, of arms, of like hand weapons. Of course, they have knives and stuff, but I think the most important is that you can have some kind of restriction on bearing arms. I don't know, what's your view on this?
I believe wholeheartedly in rational regulation, because there's really no cogent argument for people to either want or need machine guns. to be more accurate, semi-automatic firearms like Uzis. You're not going to do any good trying to hunt a deer with it or hunt a bear with it.
Most people are dangerous to themselves. I think most accidents related to guns are from people that own them rather than from other people.
You're absolutely right. The vast majority of statistics indicate that if, for instance, suicides are dramatically higher in a home that has readily available firearms. So,
I think it's a matter of education, first of all. I think the education system is another vast, you know, not just for America. I'm blaming my country first, and we have one for me. And Greece should be embarrassed for it because, you know, we have all this tradition with philosophy and stuff that the rest of the world knows. And I'm embarrassed because, you know, you meet people in England, you know, professors in America that are obsessed with, you know, the Greek philosophy and the philosophy. And we ourselves, I mean, like in schools and little children, don't know anything about it because we have such a crap, pardon my language, educational system that doesn't help. It drives the children out of the school, you know, just to consume their time with other things. And for me, that's one of the worst things in the country because education is the starting point for everything. It's the foundation of society for me. The education is everything.
It has to be. And yet, by the same token, maybe you've identified, Petros, fundamental flaw, and that is that we here in America do tend to mythologize places. And yes, we respect a place like Greece, as literally the cradle of everything we are or want to be.
No, there is a misconception. Greece has and always will and did have a great civilization, but it's not like in every country, like America had the revolution, it was the first country to have a revolution in terms of, civic rights and stuff, even before the French Revolution. That was with Greece too, but now, you know, we have the worst government ever in Greece, and we won't change it. That it's some things change people within, and they don't care about politics, but there are worse countries in this, I was in England for a year, and I was just, I couldn't believe, I already knew that people didn't care for politics in England, but couldn't believe that, nobody ever talked about anything that means something. So I was just taken aback because, I thought I was going to a country, with a great educational system and stuff. I went to one of the best universities in the world, University of London, but even the students, even the professors, they just didn't care about basic stuff like wars around the world I don't mean, to blame the professors because they were wonderful people, obviously, but, I was talking to a East European fellow student of mine, and I talked to them about, what's going on in Iraq and how that's wrong and people, losing their lives, and they were just saying, that's life and you can't stop. And I say, God, where did you come from? Which planet are you living on? They just don't care. And for me, that's just, I don't know. Maybe it's
I think what you're talking about is the lack of self-awareness that.
It's like they just think. I told them, just because you don't care, it doesn't mean that this thing won't come knocking on your door the other day. Because you can't run away from these problems. It doesn't mean because it happens in America or Iraq. It may be you the other day involved in a war or, a terrorist attack or a financial meltdown. People in Greece, here it happens a lot that they think, just TV, it's far away. It's not going to affect us. For me, this is the biggest mistake. And one of the, fundamental truths about the world is that when you don't care, no one else will care.
Well, you're talking about a question of self-awareness, and there are a lot of, I'm not trying to diminish anything, but what you hear, for instance, on this program, is a beautiful cross section of people who actually do care about what happens in their world.
Yeah, well, that's why I was stuck on the horn from the first time I heard it.
But don't think for an instant that everyone is like that, because
no, of course it's not. That's the problem. If everybody was like that, we wouldn't have problems in the world.
No, we'd solve them. But we have a tremendous problem in this country with education, with high school.
I think America has problem because it, you know, it does a taxonomy of people in terms of, you know, education. These people can go and these people cannot go because financial reasons, social, I don't know, social status reasons. I'm trying to get in a top American university from, you know, I don't know, half the world apart. And it's already difficult for me because, you know, it's already, I have good credentials, but it's like they say in the book that you have to start the application 1 year before. No, how difficult is that? And I'm thinking if with my, you know, kind of, I think I was in a better position that, you know, most lower in terms of financial American, you know, families. So how difficult would it be for them, you know, to get a good education or...
And that's the, you know, that's one of the problems with the last 8 years is we have made it more difficult for young people, if regardless of how bright they are, to get a high-quality college education.
And you mean, I want just to mention one thing. I don't know, it's quite relevant, but I'm not sure if you are familiar with ETS that does the TOEFL and GRE tests and all that.
I'm not sure.
It's like an organization, non-profit, they say, that, you know, they have this test for foreigners and also for Americans for the graduate record examination.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, I took the graduate record exam once
you
upon a time.
Well, my God, it was the most difficult test I've ever taken. Unbelievable. And yet, you know, like, but that was in part for, you know, knowledge, but as regarding the language, I had the Cambridge proficiency since 98. And I could never use it because every time I go to university, you know, in the Anglo-Saxon world, they say, you cannot use it. We want the TOEFL. They say, why? I have the proficiency. It's like a million times more difficult. Say, we don't care because, you know, they just want to make $108 every time. And I took it like 2005, December, and I want to apply this year, but I have to take it again because they say in 2 years, you know, it's not valid anymore. Like, you don't know English anymore in 2 years. Like, I forgot English like 10 times in my life, and I have to take it again. I don't know. I don't know how many times I have, you know, given.
Well, don't worry, Petros. The same racket applies here. The test scores go stale like some sort of you know, bread left out on the shelf overnight, and then you have to pay to take it all over again.
At least, this for the GRE is 5 years, you know, it's valid for 5 years. But TOEFL, like, you're going to forget, you know, in 24 months, you're going to forget all the English you've learned in your whole life. And you know what's, for me, it's like, I want to go over the top when I hear this, because I had some Chinese, you know, fellow students, you know, no offense to the Chinese people, of course, but I have some Chinese fellow students in London that they could barely speak English, and they had been admitted to the same program as me, with the same test. And I say, what's going on here? Because I'm thinking they're paying, you know, double fees because they're not European Union status. And I think maybe something's there because they're paying double. Maybe something's there with the university. I'm saying, can't I find anywhere something that's, you know, how do you say in English? The word, you know, slips my mind. That's, you know, valid and correct in the admissions and it's fair. That's why I want to come in America. I'm hoping at last find, you know, some credibility somewhere.
Well, indeed.
I was hoping that find in the UK, but believe me. That count is, you know.
Well, it's been interesting to hear your perspective because we've chatted some in the chat room as well. There is, and it's heartening to me to know that there is still a profound respect for the educational system over here, especially higher education.
There is, because when I log, you know, it seems to me that some universities like that, though I'm applying to like Cornell or University of Pennsylvania, they have like this kind of organizational culture, like they're leading institutions. In sort of a way that you really mean something to them as a student, because in the UK you're just a number. As long as your number is done, no, they don't care about you anymore, or they don't care even when you are a number. You know, like when you pay, you are a number, but they don't care about you even then. It's just, you know, it's just a system, and they don't care about anything else. And all those things, you know, you can write some things on the web about what you're going to offer, you know, academically. And learning objectives, every course has, you know, 5 or 6 learning objectives, and by the time you're done, it's like 6 weeks. What are you going to learn from 6 weeks? Like, they have, you know, some reading lists, vast. And they don't even teach you the basics. You have to learn from themselves, for yourself. You know, I think that's overrated. The UK education is definitely overrated. And I think probably there are some top institutions, but I think their culture is all wrong. I don't know, I've never been to America, and I hope it can, but I'm sure I'll find it.
What kind of a time frame are you on as far as your hopes to get here?
Well, you know, the deadlines for applications are 15th of December, so I'm applying. I'm just finishing my applications for this month coming. But it's kind of difficult. This, you know, institutions I'm aiming at are very difficult. They only take, like, you know, 15 in 500 applications.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really hoping my, you know, proposal essay will do some difference. But it's difficult. But I think for me it's not a time of if it's time of when, because I'll keep trying until I get there.
Well, above all, persistence is the watchword, and I sincerely hope that you do achieve your goal, because I have no doubt that you would be a benefit to whatever program to which you're admitted.
You know, I just at first, like if you asked me, like 3 or 4 years ago, I just, you know, said to people that I want to go, you know, and learn many things so I can make, you know, kind of more money and be more comfortable and have a more security. But now it's different because from what I've seen and, you know, living in London where so many, you know, destitute people live, poor people, and I think that from what I'm doing, and it's very related to the different strand of economics, because that's another thing I want to talk about, and, you know, next time I call in, because I'm talking too long now, because all this collapse, the financial meltdown, in quotes, it's, and for me, it's due to too many classically, neoclassically trained economists. And this is just a mainstream Milton Friedman economics. And what I'm doing right now is kind of a new strand of economics that, you know, goes to sub-disciplines or other disciplines like psychology, like, you know, behavioral science and things like that, and that gives you another perspective of economy. Like, economy is not just equations in a book, because you can never make economy work with mathematics, because, you know, it will make people that don't know mathematics believe you, and, well, you will get away like billions with what happened with most, you know, firms, what they did. And now they're getting all the money because they destroyed the economy. I was reading the Tribune the other day. Congratulations, you ruined the American economy. Take some more money. You know.
Well, and there's even more of that coming out. I've got a story here in my stack this evening, Petros, of the fact that while everybody else was watching the debate in Congress over the bailout, it turns out that the Bush administration was that what was in the bailout bill and tucked nicely away was essentially a $2 trillion windfall, or I'm sorry, a $140 billion windfall for American banks in the form of tax loopholes. And a lot of members of Congress are absolutely incensed at that.
Well, I think that's not it's not a matter of whether you are Republican or Democrat. It's a matter of integrity and the moral, you know, what moral ground are you standing on? Like, you know, this is very easy for me to fix this system, is in quotes, because there was no auditing, you know, institution for the financial markets, for firms, for anything. And when you don't have a valid auditing system, you know, people are going to get away with these things. And that's what Alan Greenspan did. He took away, you know, all the auditing, even the few that were, you know, working, he took them away. And now he says, he went in front of Congress, the Congress, Congressional Committee, and says, oh, I was wrong. Like, you know, what kind of person says that? I, you know, 5 years old, you know, I spilled the cookie jar. Oh, I'm sorry. I won't do it again. Like, you ruin half the world economy and say, no, I didn't believe that would happen. No, it's, for me, these things, you know, are kind of...
It sounds to me as if you might say that it's almost criminal.
It is criminal. For me, these people should be in jail, along, you know, with George W. Bush and Tony Blair and all this stuff. I hope now I'm talking live on the USR. No one is, yeah, recording this conversation and sending it over to Cornell Berkeley and saying, no, do not admit this.
Don't name, Petros, don't name the schools. Oh, goodness gracious.
I hope no one is listening right now.
Petros, it has been wonderful talking to you.
You too.
Call in any...
I took too much of your time.
No, you did not take any... No. This is what this program is designed for. This is the kind of conversation that we absolutely love to have.
If I'm lucky enough one day, you know, to teach in a university or, you know, to have some kind of position that I can, you know, have people listening to me seriously, I will definitely promote...
Well, you have made a beginning, because there are a large number of people right now who are listening and paying attention, and I appreciate your input, because the fact that you mentioned this Milton Friedman economic thought, that's got to be buried. That's got to be, because it's been proven an abject failure, and we've got to have new people and new thinking.
Sorry to interrupt you, but most people in America, you know, that don't have a lot of education, I don't mean to say this, you know, to offend anyone, but it's not their fault, but they think that socialism means communism, and this is the most, you know, biggest mistake anyone can make, you know, mentally, because socialism means something completely different. Because socialism means that, you know, you use some of the money that you throw at banks and they eat it away to make some, you know, basic structures for your people, like hospitals, like schools, better education, better health, like roads and stuff. And this is like, you know, very simplistic kind of explanation, but most people should understand it, that.
Well, we have socialized institutions here.
I know there's no universal healthcare.
No, there is not. And that's what I was getting at. We have socialized institutions here, but the right wing is loath to admit it. And I think probably the bottom line for all of this is that if we actually start doing some good for the people of the United States, and they recognize that government can be a positive force of popular change, because, in fact, you know, the Constitution says we, the people, are the government. If we bring that to fruition, if we make that a reality, then the right-wing party is effectively done. Because they will never succeed with their tired old the Friedman-esque arguments again, because they will have once and for all been proven the frauds that they are.
The proof for all is that they always loved, as you said, governmental intervention, and now they did the most substantial, you know, the most incredible degree, government intervention in history, even more than Russia. That's above throwing, you know, giving money from so much money from government to banks. It's over communist, like the most, you know, is the most vast government intervention ever made in history. So what are they talking about, unregulated markets and free markets that, you know, are, you know, the solution to everything? They've just proven that it's, you know, the road to hell. So what more do they need?
Well, precisely. Petros, feel free to share your thoughts. I love getting your emails. We love seeing you in the chat room. And call in any time, my friend.
I just want to call in to remind people that there are some good people left in Europe. And
there are millions of good people left in Europe.
No, there are a lot of people, but they don't know head on radio. I'll tend to that until the next time.
To tell your friends and neighbors, and we'd love to hear from more folks. And I hope we'll hear from you again soon as well.
Okay, thanks a lot, Bob.
Oh, thank you. What a wonderful call. Have a good morning.
You too.
Bye-bye. A new friend. I've been chatting and emailing with Petros for a number of months now. And what a brilliant, brilliant man he is. And I sincerely hope that he achieves his dream of coming here and adding to the wit and adding to the intelligence as we face this call to build an America that can be the America we all dream of. Let's continue. Let's roll along. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey.
This is Brandon from Brooklyn, New York.
Brandon, hello. Welcome to the program. It's so good to hear from you.
Glad to finally be able to call in. I got my voice back.
It sounds like it's not quite 100% yet, but close.
No, not quite. I'll call in again when it gets to be 100%, but I thought I'd call in as soon as possible. I wanted to say thank you for reading my email on the air after the election return. And to read it again on your prime time show the day after. So thank you very much for that, and the head on radio audience.
Well, let me say no thank you, because what you wrote And for those who want to hear it again, it is, I think I read it at the top of the Wednesday show last week, the 5th of November. You have put together the best distillation of the worth and the value of what not just we at the Horn, but everyone else doing this, Tom Hartman, Mike Malloy, Randy Rhodes, the Air America people, Nova M, the Horn, what we're trying to accomplish. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. And in fact, I can't sit down here in the studio now without seeing your words. I put them up as a constant reminder to me.
Thank you. Well, you know, it's because of progressives like you and Randy Rhodes and Mike Malloy that have, you know, we've kept the light on. You know, we keep promoting the truth, you know, against the sea of right-wing lies. And, you know, it has to stop. In fact, I was watching Bill Maher's show on HBO Real Time over the weekend, and he had an ending commentary at the end of his show, and it was so, so spot on. He was specifically talking to Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, and he pretty much told them to stop it, that don't try to do to President-elect Obama what they did to the Clintons during their administration. He felt like when you compare the damage that this president has done in terms of starting a war on lies and outing a CIA agent, and he rolled off a few other things, he said, he feels, don't ever say the words, President Obama fails to follow the rule of law. He feels that that ship has sailed. And I feel that that was the opening salvo against this massive communication infrastructure that we're competing against. We're trying to promote truth. And just really going off the rails since President-elect Obama won the election. Vitriol. They have not stopped. They will not go away. And, you know, we just have to keep pushing onward. And I just want to just give you guys much love and thanks for all the work that you've done. I mean, we're struggling against, you know.
I do. All kinds of things. I do. And you are absolutely correct, Brandon, when you say that they're not going away.
No.
I guess there are people who have been at this much longer than I who know what it's like to not have something like George W. Bush in the White House, to have something better. But I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out sort of whether there's a philosophical shift in what we do, or whether we change our modus operandi, or whether we continue to keep just a broad, bright, hot light on the right wing. And for my part, I can't help but thinking that we are correct in continuing to keep an eye on the right, but also to sort of broaden the focus to include what are real liberal values, and to keep as much of an eye on the Harry Reids and Nancy Pelosi's of the world. I watch the stories of the it's become a soap opera, this back and forth between Joe Lieberman and Harry Reid. And I gotta tell you, Brandon, I've got a real going on in the pit of my stomach at the way that the, you know, the rumblings or little bits and pieces that come out from Harry Reid's office. If Joe Lieberman goes into the new Senate and retains his Senate the committee chair,
yes, committee.
I'm gonna have a fit. I mean, I just kind of—I'm not saying I'm not, you know, laying out any future programs, but I just kind of, by virtue of just knowing me and knowing what my values are, I'm gonna be real upset.
Oh, I totally agree with you. economy and the state of our nation. President-elect Obama just may want to keep things the way they are just for the sake of dealing with the urgent needs of the nation at hand. But, you know, I agree with you. You know, I was talking with my wife the other day, and she was saying, what do you think is going to happen to Joe Lieberman now? I said, well, I'm hoping that they just tell him, thanks, but your services are no longer required. I mean, we have enough in the Senate. We have enough Democratic seats in the Senate where we don't need his vote. I know that the goal was to try and get a filibuster-proof Senate, but when you consider when the Republicans had control of the Congress during up till 2007, they didn't need a supermajority. They just needed enough. And they got all this damaging legislation put through. But now the American people have spoken, and they've decided to give the Democrats a try. And I think they need to tell the Republicans, look, the legislation we're putting through is going to be good for all Americans. And that's where, you know, your network and the Nova M's and Air America and everybody else and Keith Olbermann and Rachel Maddow on MSNBC, that's where we come in, where we can deliver the message that the policies that President-elect Obama wants to put through will be good for all Americans. You know, I remember listening to a broadcast of yours some time back, and you had a right, I mean, you were totally correct in your point that basically progressive communication organizations need funding. We need to build our communications infrastructure. I mean, it's something like what Barack Obama has done, you know, in organizing the youth vote and his campaign strategy. We need the same thing on our end. We need that funding so that we can strengthen or get a larger foothold, you know, in the just in the debate against, in the debate against the right-wing argument. And
Well, I'm gratified, Brandon, to know that that had some resonance with you, because above all, the funniest thing is that we can build that infrastructure, not just the horn. I'm talking about everybody, for probably decidedly less than what it costs the right wing to do it. And thereby, and if that's the case, we can build more of it, and we can challenge on a broader basis, and basically we can just watch the right wing hate machine echo chamber fall of its own weight and bankrupt itself. I had a fascinating article sent to me by my buddy. He's more like a brother. And a man whom I have, for whom I have profound respect, and that is Dr. Bill O'Brien. He emailed me an article over the weekend from Boston.com, the Boston Globe, and the title of the article, if you want to go find it at some point, is "The Rising Irrelevance of Talk Radio," and it's a story from Saturday, November the 8th, and it's profound to consider, but I think it was written in such a way, Brandon, that they're talking only about right wing radio.
That's true.
And they talk, and it's odd because there's a passage in there that just got all over me when I read it, because it sounded like somebody had heard what we were talking about. I don't want to take up too much of your time, but just to share this one remark from this commentary, and it's by Steve Ellman and Alan Tolz, T-O-L-Z, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
They write, "Phone calls from listeners once occupied 40% to 50% of a typical program," talking about right-wing talk radio. "A host would often spend 5 to 10 minutes, and sometimes much more, with an individual caller if the caller's ideas warranted it." Names a lot of people, a lot of talk hosts familiar to Boston area people, He said these hosts actually argued with their callers. They asked them questions like, what makes you say that, or why do you feel that way? This led the majority of listeners, the people who never made calls themselves, to value the medium as a place they could sample the ideas of others, even if they didn't agree with them. But there's no going back, they write, even if a modern host wanted to try. The American mass audience is dispersing, and talk radio, if it is to survive, will have to adapt to a nichified world. And I found that interesting because it serves as confirmation to what I have said all along, because, you know, I'm a talk radio listener as well as one doing it, and I've listened to more than my, really makes my brain hurt when I think about it, more than my fair share of right-wing hate radio, and that's what I've said all along. It's turned into this, it's turned into this sort of cult of personality. Megadettos from Busted Knuckle Rush, we just love you out here. Well, that's enough about you, my friend. Let's talk about me.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It is a cultist personality. I tell you, for many years, talk radio has been nothing but right-wing until recently, over the past 4 years. And, you know, I found your network through Mike Malloy, because sometimes when he was on Air America Radio, he would say, I was on Bob Kincaid's show, and I would say, who's Bob Kincaid? And I did a little, and then he mentioned your network, and, well, the rest is history. So, but I'm thankful to all of you, because you guys do a tremendous job, and you're still doing tremendous work, quality work. You know, I'm just a humble consumer, and, you know, I glean information here and there, but I'm thankful that I can hear a radio network that speaks to my values, and where I'm always saying again and again and again, wow, I agree with that. You know, this is great, you know. And I sent you another email, too, just to let you know about an open letter to Republican voters.
Yeah, and I do have it.
Oh, that's good.
And I'm hoping in the next day or so that we will get to it, because I want it. It's brilliant and it's beautiful, and I want people to hear it, because you have apparently a knack for distilling these ideas and making them more cogent than I can probably do when the spit is flying, if you know what I mean. and so I will be sharing that with the audience. And, you know, you say you're a humble consumer, Brandon. Don't ever say that on this program again. Okay. Because if we're getting anything right here, what we are getting right is, I hope, the respect and the regard that we have, A, for people as audience, and B, more importantly, for people, for the expertise that they carry with them through any given day.
Mm-hmm.
Because I learn more from the callers to this program than the callers learn from me. And what's more, I learn more from the workaday, extraordinary Americans who call this program than I would probably learn in a week of so-called expert interviews. Because the expertise lies in working America, Brandon. The expertise lies in being able to balance the need to do car repairs, to buy fuel, to put food on the table, to take care of your future, take care of your children. Working America are heroes.
Amen to that.
As compared to the, you know, the crowd, there's a segment of the population out there that all they have to do is pick up the telephone and make sure that the nanny picks up the kids. They pick up the telephone again and find out what the cook is going to cook that night. They pick up the telephone again and make sure that the chauffeur is going to pull up by the awning so that they only have to use their $10,000 umbrella for a couple of seconds. Those people have no challenges in their existence.
No, you're absolutely right.
It takes expertise. It takes expertise to be a working American. So, I hope you get. I mean, I wasn't calling you down for.
Oh, no, no,
saying
no,
humble consumer, but yeah. I mean, you get it.
That's the best way I could describe it. I wanted to introduce to you my wife as well. She was listening in just to say hi.
Hi, Bob.
Oh, hi.
You know, we're doing this together. I came home and I said, are you calling Bob tonight? And he said, yeah, I'm going to try to call now. And I said, well, I want to be there. So I came upstairs. So we're all here. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just great. I'm still overjoyed from last week, and of course I also got my little introduction to another medium, another art form in the last week. So I'm sort of bamboozled and mind boggled by what I witnessed there.
Oh, yeah, congratulations on shooting video. I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Well, I haven't seen any of it yet. I've seen some stills that were captured along the way, and I don't know if the horn ever takes off, Brandon. There may be some plastic surgery in my future. I'm not sure.
Well, don't worry.
Travel to New York?
Pardon?
You ever travel to New York?
I am sad to say I am largely ignorant of everything except the bus ride between LaGuardia and JFK.
Well, if you ever come to New York, it'd be nice to meet you in person.
Oh, gosh, I would love to. I'd love to. You know, we've got a number of listeners up there in the city, and if the opportunity ever presents itself, I will certainly make that known. Among other things, we get out and we go around and talk to groups about things like mountaintop removal to let people know what's going on. And I'm hoping at some point that will wind up with me in the city, and we'll have a big family get-together.
Oh, that would be splendid. I would really like that. My coworkers, so many of them, are celebrating Obama's victory. I come in every morning, and they're playing Obama songs.
Oh, that's that. I have this.
In their uniforms, they're playing Obama songs, and they're having such a good time. And when he did his press conference, you could hear a pin drop. Everyone ran to every public television.
I was so proud of that. Fennell, right?
Yes
Fennell.
Yeah, Fennell. I was so proud of that press conference I was about to bust. And I have to admit, I was a little bit proud of me, too. I try to keep that in check. But the program on Thursday, before the Friday press conference, I had referenced that old line from Bill Murray in Stripes on the air where he says, "We're all mutts."
Yeah.
And then lo and behold, on Friday.
He must be listening to your show. That's all I could say.
You don't have to call in, Barack, but, you know, we dig you, buddy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, most black people in America are mutts.
We are mutts.
They, you know, he's just one of us.
Exactly. Exactly. He is American all the way down to the ground. And I think that's probably why they so viciously and vociferously attacked him as something foreign, something strange, someone other, is because there was a recognition within the Republican Party that he's about as American as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, you know, with that in mind, it invigorated their hate. But you know what? I can only imagine that in the city there's a lot of smiling going on.
Oh, there's a tremendous amount of smiling going on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The mood and the vibe is very upbeat, very positive, very hopeful. I can't tell you, you know, I said it, you know, I can't stop saying it. I said this, I never thought I'd live to see this day. It is a great day for America. You know, so we can just hope that there are better days to come. We know there's work to be done. We know we have problems. But as President-elect Obama said, you know, we are Americans, and he knows we can do it. I know we can do it. You know, I'm sure we all share that sentiment.
I know I do, and I know that the Horn audience does. And Brandon and Fennell, it's a double treat getting to talk to you, Brandon, and then getting you on the line as well, Fennell.
Well,
and
if you ever come out to West Virginia, we're definitely going to look you up.
I hope you will. I sincerely hope you will. And don't be a stranger. You've survived your first phone call. From here on, it's easy sledding.
Well, I'd like to say I will be a regular caller. So, hey out there to our fellow listeners like Susan and Juanita and Reverbo and Peter and John and David from Maine. You know, howdy, and you'll be hearing from me soon.
I look forward to it, and take care of those pipes. All right.
Yeah, you know, he was actually worse. This is, he was really bad.
Yeah, I almost had no voice, but it was worth it. Mm-hmm. It was totally worth it, you know, just going out and just yelling at the top of my lungs.
As opposed to the last eight years where you just wanted to yell in manifest frustration and agony.
Yes,
yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
Well,
you take care.
Oh, both of you do as well, and I can't wait till we talk again. All right. Take care.
Okay.
Good night.
Bye now. That's Brandon and Fennell in New York City. And if it's not abundantly clear to you yet, the way Brandon lost his voice was yelling and cheering in abject jubilation, utter joy. That cry that comes out from all the way down in your toenails, and you just can't stop yelling for the sheer beauty and pleasure of it. And it takes a while to, come back. So, but it sounds like you're doing great so far. You'll be in fine form by the next time. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
Hey, Gary, what's going on?
Not much, man. How you doing?
Doing good.
Doing good, man. Doing good. We made it so far.
Yeah, we're almost at a week now.
We made it so far. But it was a long tread. What, 2 years?
Well, it was the longest in the history of the American political process, as far as I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really 400 years, and probably could add probably another 1,000 to that.
Here. I saw...
The fight against good and evil is as old as dirt on wind, you know?
Yeah, it is. I saw a great editorial cartoon. I forget who penned it, but it was a beautiful... It was a caricature of Mount Rushmore. And it was Abe Lincoln leaning over and giving the thumbs up to George Washington, who was leaning over and giving the thumbs up to Abe Lincoln. And I saw that, and I just got a little tingle down my arm and spine. And stuff. It was just, yeah, we're getting it. After 8 years of getting it wrong, we got it right.
Yeah. But, you know, I was thinking about this, and this was something I was going to call in a while back, but I never got around to calling in about it. You know, I've been always kind of, you know, we were going through the thing, through this whole process, trying to define what change was, and all of us kind of lost in it. You know, I started to think about it, said, you know, what this really thing has really been about is really what the horn is about, and what my brother from Greece just called and spoke about. We, particularly the progressive side of whatever, you know, Bush and those guys, the way they came to power was they were working in the abstract, you know, with the fear and the... And all this other kind of stuff they throw up, but because you can't get your hand on it. And it seems like Obama was very smart to come out with this change thing, because change, of course, and hope is abstract too. And he never ever could get a handle on him. And so to me, it's like hope and change will always trump fear. We know that. If it's given, you know, equal footing or, you know, given a chance. And, you know, and I was thinking about what the caller was saying earlier, you know, what this thing is all about is everybody just trying to get a collective consciousness, because that's the army that they cannot stop. If we all get to the point where we understand exactly what they're doing and we're all connected on a very abstract way, that is how the change is going to come. Because if they know where we are at any given time, you know what they do, Bob? They take us out.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, that's what, Gary, makes the overall effort so joyful and so important. And so worthy is that if we give this everything we have, everything, you know, the old 110% of the football coach at halftime, if we give it that and we push through these things that America so desperately needs, then we won't have to go head to head with the ideologues and the hate merchants of the right wing. Because if we do these things, they will succeed. We know that. And when they succeed and America begins to fulfill her promise, then the right wing will die of its own irrelevance. That's some of what I was talking about with Petros. And I believe we can. I absolutely believe we can.
No, I think it's like what Lawrence Arabia used to say, it is written. I think it's written, personally. I just think we just... You know, when I was watching it on TV the other day, you know, and I was thinking too today, actually, because, you know, I was going to try to say, I'm going to take a week off. I'm just going to try to chill out, not look at, you know, anything on TV, just try to, you know, bask in the glory of all of this. And lo and behold, I don't know why I did it. I went up to one of these websites and I saw this thing about, you know, that, the Fed is not offering any transparency on this $2 trillion that they're stealing from us.
Yeah.
Basically. And I just went into a full rage. And I was like, you know, almost like you can't even come up for water because it's like this. We're like in the middle of a war. And I say, well, you know, I want to take a coffee break right now. All of a sudden, here comes the ink, coming scud, you know? You just can't do it. So it's like we're on the battlefield no matter what, you know? And we won't stop because we can't stop, you know? I think that's really the issue. I don't think there isn't going to be any relaxation from anybody at this point because I think people really don't. You know, I read the book that you were talking about, told me to get free lunch. You know, you read that stuff, and, you know, you kind of see this stuff. It's like, man, they are just straight up robbing the Treasury so that Obama or whoever is in power in terms of other cabinet seats really will be boxed in, and they can't do anything. It's crazy, man. It's really crazy.
Yeah, it is. But, Gary, you do have the sense that the feeling that while these people are going to howl and scream, I mean, I can't tell you the titles of the right-wing hate emails that I get, you know, the alerts and so. Video, Obama to ban Gitmo and oil drilling. They're going to do this all the way down. They're going to do this all the way down, but it's going to be the sound of somebody falling off a cliff or down a well. And Lassie's not going to go find Timmy to get him out. But it's on and on and on. You know, the religion industry is cranking up the hate. But all we have to do is stay focused and remember to periodically tell them to sit down and shut up that they had their chance. And I don't want to be rude or anything, but the right wing is not known for accepting or recognizing nuance. And the thing that I've identified, at least that satisfies me, about Barack Obama is what I jokingly refer to him as Obama Juan Kenobi from time to time, with his Jedi mind trick. He did that to the right wing. During the debates, when McCain would be shaking that nasty old finger at him and saying socialist and William Ayers and he just sat there in equanimity and acted as if it had not been said and went on and talked about the things that really, really matter to America. You know, the William Ayers controversy didn't offer America anything in the way of a solution to get out of the financial crisis. Talking about, in the late stages of the campaign, talking about Khalidi didn't say anything to America about how we're going to go about bringing back our jobs that have been sent overseas in an absolute hemorrhage for the last 8 years. And so I've got a considerable amount of confidence in his ability to stay focused. And the fact that they've already said, you know, look, we got 200 executive orders to overturn. That means they're already drafting, right?
They're doing a lot of reading. You know,
I think they've been reading it for a long time.
I think so. Well,
I mean,
I don't have time to waste.
No.
They don't have any time to waste.
And I'm really now to be fair, the one thing I'm really looking for and hoping for is that while the inauguration is a justifiable American celebration, that it won't be one of these typical obscenities. I remember how sickened I am or was when the Bush administration put on that disgusting display during 2004 with a war going on. And I'm trusting Obama and his team to recognize that there is a middle ground and that there is a level of decorum which must be respected in circumstances like this.
We'll see, but I think the American public is gonna, you know, I think they'll do it in a certain kind of way because I think when you add in the fact of what it means symbolically to America, it ain't gonna be just a party. I think it'll be more of a recognition of America's fulfilling its promise, and, you know, we're coming together as people, putting aside some past sins, possibly even forgiving some. I think when you add all that into it, I don't think. See, Bush and them didn't have anything when they put on any spectacle. What were they cheering about? They hadn't really accomplished anything. I think this is different. I think you can have a celebration, you know, if it's for something good, if it's something meaningful. And I think that automatically will give you justification for it. But I think if it's for something that's just, you know, based on reason, you know, then I think you probably would have an issue. But, you know, I think it'll be okay. I mean, you know, the networks and all these newspapers and books and stuff, I mean, they're probably going to drain a lot of it to death because a lot of, you know, stuff is being sold right now and it's earned them a lot of money. I'm just a little concerned with that they don't try to commercialize it too much, you know.
Yeah.
It is a big step forward. And I actually don't have a problem or even worry, as you know, with Barack Obama's judgment. I'm still concerned and will continue to be concerned about the 52 million that voted the other way. And even though I respect their vote, I still say that was just too many Americans who are in the dark. And we really got to help educate, you know, more people than that.
Well, you know, the book says better to light a candle than curse the darkness, Gary. And what I think, and I don't think you're cursing the darkness. I don't think that at all. But, you know, it really is my hope. It's my hope that over the next 4 years, we can make this, we can render the right wing utterly irrelevant. And oh, man, am I going to get myself in karmic trouble for this. In 2012, that we can give Barack Obama a mandate that will tell not only him but the world and perhaps most importantly the right wing that America really is sick of their filth, and that we're going to start living up to the potential of the America in the 21st century that we know we can and ought to be. Because I think the first 4 years of this administration are going to be nothing but mopping up and cleaning up and figuratively speaking, closing gushing plumbing pipes and clearing out the sewer.
Well, I think what we may underestimate, and I think what could be possible, and this gets back to what people believe about certain things, is that we must be wary of the churches and the hell that they're going to bring in the coming years. And if that isn't tamped down, if somebody doesn't really say, look, church and religion should be separated from the government, we're going to have problems. Because George Bush would never have became president if it wasn't for the churches.
No, no, you're right.
We wouldn't have problems with Prop 8 right now if it wasn't for the churches. I can go any church anytime right now, and particularly a black church, and for all their hatred for gay people, can walk in there and see some of the biggest, heaviest, overweight people. Nothing against overweight people, but my point being that their Bible says that gluttony is a sin. So if they can cast a stone for that, why can't someone say, well, you can't have a right because you do, you know, X, Y, and Z. You can't get on a plane. We're going to charge you twice because you're, I mean, you know, you can't be just that hateful toward one group of people and then not look at yourself in the mirror. And that's really a big part. You know, you look at Sarah Palin and her rise. These evangelicals really was pushing this thing. So when I'm talking about that 51 million, I'm actually thinking about a very targeted group. It's the evangelicals that we have a problem with in this country. They are the ones now holding us back. Now, I always try to remind people, when they talk about churches, I say, you know, it was the prostitutes, the taxpayers who, when they strung up Jesus, said, let him down. Even the Governor Pilate, who was a corrupt man himself, said, I see no fault with this man. It was the churches, the priests, who hung Jesus. And that's what this is all about. So I think that, you know, in my opinion.
Well, then, Gary, is the starting.
People are going to get mad. They're going to call it, oh, don't talk about the church or whatever.
No, not on this program.
Well, I know not on this program, but my point being, because look, I'm a Christian.
I understand. Oh, yes. Yes, I know that.
And I read the Bible, and I know what it says about the last days and the devil taking hold of the church. I know that the devil is taking over the church. So that's what I'm saying. That's really what we got to start focusing on. And start really trying to separate church, you know, from the American public. Because if not, they're going to get hold once again. Because again, that goes back to the abstract. When you get people in that church stuff, they get too abstract. And when they're abstract and they're not thinking clearly, all kind of hell comes out. You know. So
well, you know, and what you point out, and I pointed out as well, they're not feeling very defeated right now. Oh, sure, John McCain didn't win. But the evangelicals, they weren't real hot for him in the first place. The only thing that gave them any hope at all, and Glenn Beck admitted to this, was that if they could elect McCain, that he'd promptly drop dead and give them the evangelical president of their dreams in Sarah Palin. And with that in mind, they're not all broke up about McCain losing, because they won in Florida with their hate and bigotry. They won in Arizona with their hate and their bigotry. And the jewel in their crown is that they won in California on their hate and their bigotry. So they've got the bit in their teeth, Gary. And with that in mind, I'm reminded of the fact that, you know, Al Capone was finally taken down, not for murder, but for tax evasion. And frankly, these organizations, in the present circumstance, it's organizations like the American Family Association, it is the Mormon Church, and it's the Roman Catholic Church that have absolutely spat in the face of the separation of church and state. And what's more, they've spat in the face of the American people in the form of our tax code that tells them that they don't have to pay any taxes because they're supposed to be doing good charitable works with the money that they bring in. So maybe another one of those things on our list is to get to really, really, really sharpen the fangs at the IRS and go after people, the churches like the Mormons, for the filth and the bile and the garbage that they pumped into California. I mean, I don't want to cast doubts on anybody's freedom of speech. Oh no, they got all the freedom of speech that they want. But you know what? If they want the same freedom of speech that a private taxpayer has, they need to pay private taxpayer rates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think what it said is that as we talk about identifying things, you can't attack anything unless you know where it's coming from. You know, you got to really identify your target and your enemy and what's going on. And I think that people need to really come to the grips that right now, there's no war on Christmas. You know, as they like to say, there needs to be a war against organized religion, because it's an organized crime organization, basically. Like you said, that, you know, you look at a lot of pastors now who have this income, who are coming in, and they're not even paying taxes on it. You know, they go speaking fees and all this other kind of stuff that they do. And then, like you said, they're actually influencing policy because they're influencing the political process.
Well, look at Pastor Hagee, he of the Starve comment. We don't even know what that man makes, but we do know that he's a multi-millionaire, the exponential factors over, and that he lives on a multi-thousand-acre ranch somewhere in the wilds near San Antonio. Why is that man entitled to less transparency than an organization advocating on the other side of one of these social cultural issues?
Like you said, you know, whether what people agree or not, as far as I'm concerned, it's just like what it says in Revelation. In the last days, many will come in his name and do everything else. I mean, it's like you said, it's the greatest money laundering organization in history. I mean, where else could you hide money except for in the church? I mean, come on. I mean, you can easily hide the money, you know. And I'm not talking blasphemy here, because I ain't talking about anything against Jesus or anything.
No.
I'm talking about an organized system, just like any company that's organized or whatever. The churches are the same way. People don't believe in God. If they believe in God, they will follow his tenets. I mean, they would have fear. They would be like, wow, man, you know. They would even have discernment. They don't even have discernment to know that George Bush was a bum. That he was not of God or whatever, and he proved, and everything he did failed. So it shows you that God was not with him. If God was with him, he would have been a successful president. We would have found weapons of mass destruction. It's clear as day. But yet, so many people, Christians, are lost inside their own personal guilt and hide behind that and judge others, that they can't see clearly to make the proper discernment. You, as a Christian, the Bible tells you, Jesus tells you, you have to come out of yourself to see the needs of others to get that proper perspective on what really is happening in the world. And we really have to be focused and not be scared of coming out to churches, like you said, and saying, you know what, you might have some taxes and status, but you know what, you're not above the law, the man's law, because you pretend to be of God. You know, prove to me that you are God. You know.
Well, and what you're saying, I personally, anybody who knows, who listens to this program knows that I don't think that the evangelicals have as much to do with the teachings of Yeshua as a hog has with Sunday suit tailoring. Okay.
But they don't even know his name is Yeshua. They, you know.
Well, there, yeah, there's that. And what you're saying reminds me of Matthew 7:13, where it says, "Enter ye at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat." So that, I mean, if I understand that correctly, the book is advising the followers of the way to be really, really careful about people who speak or claim to speak with the knowledge of what Yeshua would want.
Well, it sounds to me like they would be saying, look, the last thing you want to do is be in some mega church. You may want to be some little small church, or, you know.
If there's a whole bunch of people following that way, you might want to get off that road and go into the straight gate. So, you know, yeah. But, Gary, I really appreciate your call, and I thank you for your time. And, you know, all we got to do is roll our sleeves up now. This is the beautiful work.
Yeah, this is a beautiful time. All right, man.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Gary calling from Maryland. And I hope you stayed on. Yeah, there you are. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Brother Bob.
Hey, Brother Luke, what's up?
Well, you took one of mine away. One of my points tonight was, I was going to say, tell the IRS to get off their duff and start visiting some of these churches and saying, guess what? We're going to start listening to what you all say.
Yeah, if we can shake down Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago just because Barack Obama went to church there, I think maybe it's time to have a little look at the Mormons.
Well, what was the guy a few years ago, the one where he used to have his followers making all the jewelry and the boots, Tony something or other, I can't think of what his name, that's where they went after him. You know, they didn't. That's what they busted him on, was tax.
Yes.
You know, so. That, also, one of the first things, you were talking about this earlier, is one of the things, the first thing he needs to do is tell the guy who's the chairman of the FCC, isn't it time for you to go back home now?
Yeah.
Someone put,
and, you know, that's one of the things I really don't like, and there's no getting around it, is Barack Obama is saddled with Ben Bernanke for at least another year.
Oh, I know. There's,
or maybe two.
Three are, yeah. I had one question I was watching today, and maybe somebody in your chat room can figure it out, and you can let me know later on. Now, when I don't know if this was the same way when it went from Clinton to Bush, but it's going to be from Bush to Obama. Do they reformat the computers? Do they pull the hard drives? What are they going to do? Because I tell you what, knowing Dick Cheney, I don't want any back doors left where he can get back into the system.
And you raise a hair-raising question. And
I
mean,
I don't know what the official policy is. You know what I mean?
I don't either. But you know, I know times are tough and everything. But if somebody was saying, "Hey, Bob, how do you feel if we spend a whole bunch of budget money bringing in a whole new computer system?"
Mm-hmm. Because like I say, I want to make sure that none of Cheney's friends. Because you remember what was it a couple of years ago, and to this day, the FBI still ain't done nothing about it when they caught a bunch of I can't remember whose office it was. They found out it actually managed to hack into Senator Kennedy's computer.
And that's the
nothing about it.
Yeah, the revelation that came out late last week that the FBI had gone to the Obama camp early in the campaign and said, "Listen, you've got a serious security breach."
Uh-huh.
Gee, wonder how that happened. You know, and the hacker was so good they could never find him. Now bear in mind, the FBI can track down somebody who embarrasses Sarah Palin.
And he didn't even really hack. All he did was just figure out what her password
was. Yeah, he just guessed what her password was. But they can't.
Her bio and just kept trying things, and one of them finally hit.
Reminds me of back when Peter identified those little pings that were coming from Halliburton and coming from the Department of Defense. And they were hitting him, they were hitting me, they were hitting just about everybody associated with the horn.
Had that voice, was it the voice recognition program where you'd mention certain words and things would trip? Well, I say, that's another thing. I hope in one of those executive orders that somewhere down the line says the words Halliburton, Blackwater, and KBR will no longer be used in this government in any form. Contracts.
I think in terms of keeping the keeping faith with the American people and the people that put him in office, it has to happen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, now I'm going to bring up the subject that I'm sorry to bring up, and I know it's the wrong time probably to do it, but we need to go ahead and get it out of the way.
All right.
2010, there are 19 Republicans and 15 Democrats up for re-election in the Senate.
I think I said sometime last week that the Republican Party has already started working on the off-year elections.
It's one of those things we got to start paying attention because, like I say, now two of them on our side. I do not know what the rules are. Maybe it's different in each state, but we do have the fact that Mr. Obama's seat is going to be appointed, I assume, and the same thing with Senator Biden. And I don't know if the rules are. Yeah, I know, because one or two of them have to have a special election and all that good stuff. So I don't know how that works. You know what I mean? If when they had the special election, is that just for the 2-year fill in, or is that for a full 6-year service?
It varies from state to state, but I would hazard a guess that this would be to fill out the unexpired remainder of the term.
Yeah. And as of right now, the only one out of the list I saw, the only person they had listed as actually retiring is Brownback of Kansas. Everybody else has not said. One of them, though, who will be running in 2010 is guess who? John McCain.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, John, you don't need to get the, don't put the bus up. You're still going to need it.
My friends. Of course, I guess he figures he's safe forevermore as some sort of cherished son of Arizona, even if he is a Mississippian.
Barack came within a point or two of taking Arizona.
Yes, he did. I just got a query in from our buddy Nick with regard to the whole the FBI going to Obama thing. He says, and how exactly did the FBI know that they had a problem? Just how exactly did they know that? How closely were they watching?
So I say, did the Obama camp call them? Or did they go to the Obama camp and guess what we found? It's like, well, why were you looking?
Bingo.
I know. But now there's some interesting people coming up for re-election in 2010. One of your favorite people, Senator Shelby, is up for re-election.
Oh, Richard Shelby.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, the turncoat.
Oh, yes. There's a few places where we got some good chance shots at it. A fella named Martinez in Florida.
Oh, now that would be a joyful thing.
Because he barely won last time.
Getting shed of him. Yeah, absolutely.
And the one I saw, and I said, if we can't win this one, we're in deep trouble. Some fella named Vitter in Louisiana.
Oh.
You know how it is. It's time to retalk. Well, you know, but he candles again.
Yeah, but the madam got bumped off, so dead women tell no tales, I guess.
This too is true. Who else? Oh, Harry Reid's up for re-election.
I wonder if Chip Carter's doing anything these days.
No,
you know, he ran against, who is it, Ensign. He ran against Ensign for Senate from Nevada.
Well, I say, I keep on wondering what happened to, I can't think of his name, what he's doing right now. Mayor of Salt Lake City.
Rocky Anderson. I saw the first mention of him in quite some time, Luke. He was a very, very brave and strong presence at the protest against what the Mormons did to assault the Constitution in California.
Oh, okay, because I thought Bennett is one of the people up for election this next cycle in Utah.
I imagine that. I'm guessing that conversation's already been had.
True enough. Let's see who else was. Oh, Mr. Thune in South Dakota. Wonder if Mr. Daschle's going to rerun again.
You reckon? I guess Tom's still young enough.
Well, I was going to say, at least this time, at least the Republican Party won't be pouring money into that election like they did last time. I mean, it's bad when you have the head of the Senate and you have the president and the entire staff come down and campaign against you, which is the first time that had happened, apparently, in a long, long time.
Yeah, that was just downright sleazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because like they said, that hadn't happened in a long time where somebody did all that. Who else was I saw? Oh, Senator DeMint.
Jim Demented?
Yeah, Jim Demented.
Yeah, he needs to go.
Oh, yeah. Who else was the other one I saw? I thought it would be interesting. Oh, since we just had the election over there, was...
Well, Senator Byrd will be up in 2010, will he not?
No. No, they just, him and Rockefeller both just got reelected.
No. Byrd was reelected in 04.
Oh, okay. You're right.
So I got a feeling that might be when Joe Manchin takes a run at it.
Yeah. Oh, the one I was thinking of was Burr in North Carolina. With this last election, I'm wondering if the Democratic Party's ready to try running somebody over there against him. I was thinking maybe Shuler might run against him.
Well, that's possible. Although Shuler kind of hurt himself, at least with his liberal credentials, in the last year or so, didn't he?
Yeah, a bit. But like I say, you're gonna have to run somebody. You know what I mean? So we'll just wait and see who that ends up being.
Yeah.
Who else was in there? Anybody else had a good numbers? Most of them, you know, were in their 60s. You know, because the numbers were in their 60s, not their ages. You know, it is just trying to see who has really had really close. Oh, Salazar, out in Colorado on our side, we have to watch because he had a tough race last time.
Yeah, and then he didn't help matters by turning around and being the guy who introduced Alberto Gonzalez for his confirmation hearing. Remember that?
He did not. So, like I say, I know your friend called from Denver earlier, and I assume he'll have to keep his eye on that. That'll be starting up sometime soon. Let's see if there's anybody else offhand. See, Bitter, yeah. Oh, Mr. Bunning in Kentucky. Because he won last time with just like 50% of the vote. Jim Bunning?
Yeah, and he's crazier than a sprayed roach, too, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, him up there and Jim DeMented is just along the same lines.
It may be retirement time for Jim Bunning.
Well, the only other person I saw, yeah, I agree. But the only other person I saw that they talked about that they didn't know if he was going to retire or not was they were in the article I was looking at, they had Dodd maybe thinking about retirement. So I didn't know if he'd just been thinking about it. I mean, I say.
Well, then Lieberman's up in 10.
He's up in 12.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then Byrd's up in 12 too.
So, but like I say, I have a feeling this time Joe ain't gonna get a whole lot of money poured in on him this time.
No, I gotta.
And I don't feel Obama ain't going to come up and campaign for him like he did last time.
No, I think he's done that that's the last time. Yeah.
You know, because I'd forgotten that when they were talking about it, you know, about when all this started here with him talking with Reed. And I'm sitting there going, look, I know you all were hoping to get to 60. Throw him out. I don't care if it winds up being 59-41. I'll live with it. You know. It's like, you know, tell him if he wants to go caucus with Republicans, have a good time.
Yeah, because this little ongoing game of footsie is pretty disgusting.
Yeah, they're saying that the senators personally like him. It's like, well, that's good. They like a lot of things, but they ain't got to give him nothing. It's sort of like, Joe, you made your deal. You know, we told you you could go campaign for John McCain. He's your friend. There's nothing wrong with that. But you went to that damn RNC thing, and you sat there for your whole speech tearing down Barack Obama. If you'd want to say John McCain was a great guy, that was fine. We could have lived with that. You know, he's your friend. But you went there, and you spent most of your speech digging at Barack Obama. So don't turn around now and say, what did I do? It's like, I'm sorry, the innocent face don't work.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right, but I'm going to let you go on. I know you got other people to talk to.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, Luke.
Good evening.
All right,
alrighty.
Take care now. Bye now. Bye. Our buddy Luke in East Tennessee. And by the way, I've just been kind of keeping an eye on this to see if anybody at the editorial staff at Chicken Noodle News would pick up on this. And the homepage has reiterated a couple of times now, and the headline still remains, Obama to take office amid deep public pessimism. Now, if you do it once, it's a mistake. But if you do that twice, something's up. Now, the fact of the matter is, Barack Obama at this point enjoys a 65% approval rating, and that is due to go up in January. That is not deep public pessimism. That is optimism. That is hope. But somewhere in the fetid bowels of Chicken Noodle News, some partisan, Obama to take office amid deep public pessimism. There's a better way to write that. A much better way to write that. Because that assumes, that clearly makes it sound as if the public pessimism is directed at Barack Obama. And that's not even journalistically incorrect. That's a lie. That is outright, that's Foxworthy. Sorry, Jeff. It really, really is. Onward with the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
I'm about as happy as a man can be, considering the circumstances.
I'd reckon you would be.
I am tickled. I am the happiest man on earth. I really am, okay? Because, you know, we listen to, you call it Chicken Noodle News. I call it the mainstream media. And they have done everything they can do to paint a black face on Obama. Stop and think about it. Al Jolson, back in the day when I was a little boy, okay, he was a white man that put black face on and made fun of the Negro race. And now we have, for the first time, a man, not a Negro, not a black man, but a man, a decent man. I don't know if he will change the face of the globe, but I do know this, Bob. In my heart, and in the heart of every person on this planet, there is hope today that wasn't there before.
And I think we're hearing it manifested in the voice of folks like Petros,
yes,
calling from Greece,
yes,
talking about the optimism that he just witnesses in his day-to-day life.
That's the truth. Every one of us knows in our hearts, Bob, it doesn't matter what they tell you, what you feel. I go to the market and I see people, they stand taller, and they're just proud for some crazy reason. But no, it's different because there is something going on, Bob, for a change. Barack Obama came out with this idea of a change, and he is there. He's stepping into a cesspool, according to everything I hear. But it's, hey, maybe he'll put a stopper in the bottom of the cesspool so that all the goodness doesn't drain out. Maybe all that garbage will go. But I heard things that I can't believe. People come into, chat rooms and they talk and they say things, but they are less, pessimistic and more optimistic. Just the last few days, and we have, 71 or 70 days until he takes office? But I'm not talking about the MSM, okay, mainstream media, to all who don't understand that one. It's just the MSM is afraid, Bob. They're full of fear. They're afraid that maybe, just maybe, they will be forced to tell the truth for a change. They're afraid, Bob.
They've forgotten how to do it, if they ever knew.
They're afraid that they will be forced to. By what is that thing they used to call that, equal time or whatever? They will be forced to to not have three Republicans to one Democrat, but to have one-on-one conversation like you and I have. They're afraid to speak to each other, and they're afraid to speak to us, and at least bring up facts, Bob. Give us something that we can actually work with. They don't want to do that. You know it. Anyway, truth be known, we have a chance. And this beautiful family that is going to take residence in just 70 days, I look forward to that, Bob. A new day of Camelot may dawn. Yes, we may be free at last, you know. Thank God Almighty, and thank Martin Luther King Jr. and all those that stood against the tide. And, Bob, they're throwing everything at us except the kitchen sink.
You know, Bob, I mentioned a little bit ago about one of the editorial cartoons I had seen, and I forget who sent these to me, so I apologize. But they were, I don't have it right in front of me. I was just, there were a couple that sort of grabbed me right off the bat. And one of them that was a real beauty was a drawing of Dr. King sitting in a chair with a newspaper in his lap that said, "Obama wins." And the dialogue balloon just had him saying, "Pinch me.
Pinch me." Oh, my God. I would, oh, no. In my heart, I know that he is finally resting. I mean, think about it, Bob. He said, maybe, you know, he didn't say, he says, "I have a dream. I have a dream. And I see little white girls and little black boys walking hand in hand. Little white boys and little black girls."
Well, I made some fun of it earlier by way of just poking a sharp stick at the right wing, as I'm prone to do. But that news story out of Austin, Texas, where the Burnett kid got thrown, there was no mea culpa allowed. There was no, son, you're going to run 18 extra laps after practice every day. None of that. When he got caught posting a call to do violence to Barack Obama that included that hateful epithet, Mac Brown, who is the head coach of the University of Texas Longhorns, called him in and said, "Son, you're off the team."
Good.
And that is, there's no getting around, Bob, the fact that we're still going to have these knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, bigoted, racist, sick punk freaks. Let me excise punk from that. But we've come, I believe, to a turning place in America where even though the right-wingers and the comments below the blog post I read were awful, "Well, what happened to my freedom of speech?" You know, these dummies don't even understand that the First Amendment applies to governmental action.
Let us say this. Enough is enough. And I think the American people, all of us, there's probably 40 million out there, but there are, 310 million of us that disagree with that statement? Okay? You got 40 million out of 350 million. You know, that's just like, it's a slam dunk, Bob. We are tired. We're sick and tired of listening to their rhetoric. We're sick and tired of listening to their racism. Bob, let us begin this day and for every day, forevermore, to say, "You are my brother," whether you are black, white, Hispanic, Indian, Jewish, or whatever. But let us be that melting pot. And I think that, having Barack Obama in the White House is the beginning. end of that racism that destroyed 90% of this country and 100% of this world. We have been so racist in the past. And Bob, you've said it and I've said it many, many times. We can't afford to hate our neighbor for the color of his skin or whether he has 40 acres and a mule and we don't even have a pot or a window to throw it out of. You know, it's time that we embrace each other and say, yes, I am proud to be an American. And today we start to build a new America, one that is anti-racist, very much so. I mean, all you have to do is just say, I'm not listening to that. I'm not turning on that mainstream media anymore. I'm not listening to that.
Yeah, done now.
I'm done with it. I'll get my news from people that have something to say that makes sense. Okay? For a change. Let us go and do what we've done for the last 8 years. Look into that internet. Go find whatever news source you can and then find out if it's real or something like the Freepers and the whatever they got. They got that redneck, stuff going on all over the place, Bob. The thing is, we need to look for truthful people that are trying to give us information and not just lead us in one direction. I don't think that the very far left have us in mind, Bob. I really don't. I don't believe the far right have anybody in mind except the far right or the far left. But I think that the American people have something else in mind, and that is let us build this nation back up. Let us help where we can and get out of where we don't belong. And this, I just heard today that George W. Bush wants to get us out of Gitmo real quick. Like, okay, he's going to shut down Gitmo. And I thought about that for a moment. I thought, wait a minute, Obama will do that in the first 100 days of his...
But if Dim Leader shuts it down, then he can make sure that the shredders are going, as they probably already are, even as we speak.
See, that's exactly what I thought. He won't only shred the documents. He will shred the people. Bob, I was thinking about, when they talked about, slaves coming over from Africa back in the day, okay? Back when they used to, when they were being caught by the Yankee clipper ships, they would chain them all together and drop them into the ocean and drown them by the hundreds and dump their cargo before they got caught by the Yankees that were coming to shut down that kind of human slavery. And they dumped hundreds of people into the ocean, chained together to let them drown. And I thought, that's what Bush wants to do today to Gitmo. He's a slave trader. He's one of those evil, vile creatures.
He is indeed.
And it is in his nature to murder those poor prisoners that have been held there in captivity in that slave ship that we call Guantanamo Bay for the last 8 years, Bob, or at least the last five, okay?
Yep. Hey, Bob, I've got to roll on. I want to try to get one more call in before we close the evening out because I hate ending the show with folks on hold.
Okay.
But
Bob,
thank you very much, Bob. You've nailed it. And
it is what it is, Bob, but love, peace, honor. Honor to you. Honor to you because you have stood against the tide for the last while back, okay?
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you very much. And our best to you and all of yours.
Yeah. Same back at you.
Take care, brother.
Love you much, son.
Love you much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And moving on just here in a second, but a quick query for you. What time is it in Alaska? Here on the East Coast, it's 8:51 p.m. And I know what I'm doing. And as you go about your business, whatever time zone you're in, you're listening to this program and you're doing things that need to be done. Folks a couple of time zones away are sitting down to their dinner. Others are just beginning the commute home, perhaps. In Alaska, Sarah Palin is, in the words of the report, yeah, it's Russia 30. Nick, you're a bad, bad man. Sarah Palin is, by the very words of the news reports, frantically sorting clothes. Remember when Godzilla from Wasilla said, "Oh, I'm not taking any of these clothes home. They're just like the lights and the sound system. They're just props." Well, apparently, she thinks you get to take the props home because she's frantically sorting clothes because there are Republican National Committee auditors on the way to her home to collect the crap she stole. And it turns out, just so you'll know this, Sarah went a little more wild with the clothing budget than even we thought. Apparently, well, this is a quote from her father. Well, she was just frantically trying to sort stuff out. That's the problem, you know. Those kids lose underwear. And everything has to be accounted for. No, the kids lose underwear. Well, now we understand the Bristol's teen pregnancy. The kids lose underwear. Yeah. Sarah Palin used Republican donor money to buy undies. I haven't checked, would she shop at like rightwinglingerie.com, rightwingpanties.com? I don't know. Nah, she was at Saks and Needless Markup and other places like that. That's some high-end stuff. Can you imagine that? Not only does she have no regard for the liberals, but she even thought that Republican donors were a fatted calf to be killed. So she could buy her kids underwear? Just damn. I mean, it's not like they pay the governor of Alaska peanuts or blubber. And this is what the right wing wants in 2012. A lesser man would start screaming. Welcome to the program.
Am I on again?
You're on again. Hey, Dave, what's up?
I don't know. I think I'm just going to listen tonight. As I said earlier, I have two ears and one mouth, so I should listen twice as much as I speak. But I've been on hold for a while now, so I don't feel too bad.
Nah, don't worry about it. never hold back.
For me, there's only one division on this planet, rich and poor.
Yep.
I don't care if you're pink, purple, or green and blue stripes. There's only one division.
I might take issue with you, Dave. I see it in terms of those who work and those who don't.
No matter how poor
you are or even disabled, you work.
Yes, you do. I mean, but to me, anyone who doesn't work doesn't respect themselves. And they need help, not condemnation. But anyone who doesn't work really has missed the joy that you get from working at something and achieving a result. And that's something that I think they're really missing out on.
And perhaps the
people who don't want to work are people who have basically just given up because the world's given up on them. I know plenty of people who are poor who don't want take advantage of anybody else they want to work. But they want to be given the opportunity to do so. They don't want to be ripped off and don't want to be working for peanuts when people who are doing nothing of value or creating no wealth whatsoever are creaming off millions when people who are working hard are creaming off nothing, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think it's as simple as people who want to work and people who don't. But anyway, that's for another night maybe.
Okay. Okay, good enough.
But, you know, I really believe that. That people who don't want to work are missing out on so much. You know? There's no finer feeling than working at something, working really hard at something, and achieving a result at the end of it that you're proud of.
And seeing it progress. I couldn't agree more.
Exactly.
It's what Boss Man Wayne says all the time. He says, there is nobility in work.
There is, absolutely. That's why there's no nobility in these buggers at the top, because they don't want to work. They just want to use your and my work and steal it from them. There's no nobility at the top.
None.
Henry Ford said, I'd rather have 1% of 100 people's efforts than 100% of my own. I can't remember who it was, but I know it was some corporate madness about 100 years ago. Some character said that. Can't remember who it was. But, you know, that says it all right there. You'd rather have 1,000 people work their backsides off and cream their efforts off than make any effort themselves. You know, and that's the mentality at the top. I don't want to work. I want to be on the golf course.
Buffy, that's for the little people to do. That's for the peasants.
Exactly.
This
is the problem, that all these numbers, because that's all they are, that are floating around with all these trillions and billions and quadrillions and all of this nonsense. The problem there is that no wealth was being created. Only numbers were being moved about. You know? And that's what's biting everyone on the backside right now. Is the fact that these guys didn't create any wealth. It was all smoke and mirrors. And the mirrors broke and the smoke blew away.
Yeah, it was
to deal with it.
It was all a game shuffled from the bottom of the deck.
Exactly. You know?
I do indeed. Dave, we got to roll. Sorry.
I know,
get in.
I know.
Get in earlier next time.
I'll get on earlier next time.
All right.
Really well.
Okay. Take care, Dave.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye now.
Have a good night to everyone who's listening too.
Good deal. Bye.
Bye.
That's a great way to get a week started, everybody. Thanks for everything. And thank you to the people who make the horn go, from our moderators in the chat room to our news ninjas to our bloggers to John Fox, our chief engineer. To Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Quick little mention, somebody who busts their hump, Sue, who is a chat room mod as well as doing a lot of management on the website, she has created a separate category on the webpage, the homepage, headonradionetwork.com, called Photo Gallery. If you want to see those photographs I was talking about earlier in the program of what's going on around hereabouts, just go to headonradionetwork.com and click Photo Gallery, and you'll get an idea of why I get so pissed. So we'll be back at this tomorrow evening. I hope you'll join us. And I hope, if you haven't, that you will become part of the part of the dedicated group that keeps the horn going. There's a PayPal button at headonradionetwork.com. Seems like the months are getting harder and harder and slower and slower. And I know how hard it is for everyone else, but if you can help to keep conversation radio alive, then we will continue to be here when you want us or you have something to say. Thanks to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, coalriverwind.org. They fight the fight they fight because they know we're all downstream and we're all downwind. And always, always, always. RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A brand new week, a week filled with hope, a week filled with optimism, a week filled with the knowledge that that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout is only going to be in office for another 70 days, 17 hours, 58 minutes, and 25, 24, 23, 22 seconds, and counting. As they say over there at NASA. How do I know that? Because there's a handy-dandy little Bush countdown clock, courtesy of bushslastday.com, and it's in the chat room at headonradionetwork.com. I just love to watch those seconds tick away, knowing that America's hope, America's new birth of freedom, perhaps, yea, verily, even the restoration of the Constitution of the United States itself is within reach. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is.